that we would also, it's a new committee. We're finding our feet, as it were. This is really only our second formal sitting, and we've got a training program that we are going to be beginning to implement from the middle of August. I want to say one little anecdote. I know I said I was going to say a lot, but it's very interesting. I was chairing a committee at something. I won't mention names because it's not appropriate. I went to the minister and said, you know what, this is not fair. The playing fields are not level. I know nothing about this area. You're a former trade unionist. You're an economics lecturer. You've been in this area for over 30 years. Right? Now, look at the parliamentary committee here. Sociologist, clever mouth, as some of you may know. Well, what do I really know about the economy? Marxist though I may be. And he said, Dylan, you're right. You know what? It's in my interest that you be strong in the study group. I said, not to me the study group, so you might. I think the minister was I'm referring to. Every 6 months, we would organize a program. We would decide as the parliamentary committee the program. It would start on a Sunday night till the Tuesday evening. He would come on the Sunday, and he would stay right through to the Monday evening and take us through all these issues. I mean, we check the program, he would give it political insight, then we would, from our side, the committee would, and then we would invite experts. We would choose who it would be and so on. And it was very good because that minister realized that in his own interest, being an effective minister and department that he was overseeing, that the committee is strong. And we did it every 6 months. So I'm not saying, Mr. Nene, we necessarily have to do that. But we do think that there are things that we are very open to the executive reaching out to us and saying, look, you know, maybe you want to have some of these things done so that you empower yourself as well to have more effective oversight over us, which is what I think we as executive need. So I'm just giving you that little anecdote because it's very revealing that there are ministers who really feel, and this one certainly did, that he could play whatever role he would, provided it doesn't intrude on Parliament's oversight responsibilities of his department and himself. And I think we, in a similar vein, some of us are you here, not least chairperson, and we need to be empowered, and if there's some way in which you can help us to do that, we can now collect the issues that it happens. Okay. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We actually indeed thank you for this opportunity to appear before this committee, and we agree with you that we need a strong oversight structure with this committee. But I would also think you also equally agree that you also need a strong executive. That's the level playing field you are referring to. So we need each other in order to strengthen this in the interest of our country, in particular its economy. Chair, and as you congratulated us for our appointment, thank you for the kind words, and we also congratulate members of this committee also for having been appointed and elected to this committee. We look forward to a robust and healthy working relationship. Some I see comrade Bears across is an old hand in this committee, us and a lot of other committee members, but I wouldn't want to waste time with the acknowledgement of the members. But yesterday, Chair, we launched the filing season, and I would want to believe that all members in this room took advantage of the first day to lead by example and file your tax returns so that you. And so when we talk about these things, it's what we do that counts, as you say, more than what we say. I'm not sure whether we could run the chairs and close our eyes and ask those that have funds to raise their heads, but indeed, that's why I was saying we'll close our eyes so that we raise our eyes like a prayer, our hands like a prayer. But, Chair, as you correctly pointed out, we're starting with SARS and later National Treasury, and we apologize for the confusion because it was because of our dies, that is the case, but we first rather, again, let's rather stick to what we had agreed, that we had agreed to. But yeah, I think it's also would be good to share with you that maybe some of us may not have been in the first in the queue to fly yesterday, but by 11 o'clock yesterday, close to 50,000 people had already filed their applications, with more than 12,000 of them going through our offices, and the rest of our taxpayers taking advantage of the e-filing. So it was quite encouraging to see that we've got so many of our people taking advantage of the opening of the season. Can we also, again, as you say, that our economy is growing at a moderate pace, but it continues to perform, and it also continues to perform below its potential. Our projections have always been changing, but the accurate number will only come when we table our medium-term budget policy statement. So the media reports about the minister saying that we'll underperform are a bit over-exaggerated. But because they send message that SARS now can be complacent and not collect the close to a trillion rent that we expect of them. I am assured that despite the performance in the economy, SARS is well poised to collect the 93. And you will see that demonstrated as we table the strategic plan that SARS is ready to do that. When we tabled our budget review, we indicated that the budget we are tabling is a budget that is going to talk directly to the implementation of the National Development Plan, which is the country's framework for economic and social transformation to accelerate growth, to eliminate poverty, and to reduce inequality by 2030. And it is on this basis that we are tabling this strategic plan. We are going to be aligning all our actions in government with the implementation of the National Development Plan. In our budget review, if I may quote from it, we said the following. We said the country now enters a new 20-year phase of development. We said the NDP argues that focused principally on the economic advancement of poorest South Africans, most critically to eliminate poverty. South Africa has raised employment. This can only happen if the economy goes faster and in ways that draw in historically disadvantaged. That's what we said in our budget review. The SARS strategy plan for the period 2014-15 to 2018-19 was developed within the context of a better global outlook. Government's determination to expand and improve the delivery of vital services to all South Africans and to enhance the productive base of the country through continued infrastructure investment. Our tax system forms part of the foundation of our country's finances. The tax system raises revenue to deliver public services without placing a high burden on business and individuals. It also played an important role in addressing the market failures as governments around the world look for a more effective combination of interventions, particularly in dealing with the challenges arising from the crisis that has been unfolding in the past 5 years. So the commissioner here is going to take us through what it is that SARS is going to do in order for us to be able to meet the challenges that I've alluded to. And after that, you will also see how National Treasury also, as we get into its strategic plans to structure itself such that we are able to deliver on what we have set ourselves to do. So without wasting time, the Commissioner is going to tell us that indeed, even if the economy doesn't perform well, SARS will perform well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Ask more general questions of the minister, as normally happens in budget consideration. What I also, minister, wanted to draw your attention to, and I'm not saying you should reply. Maybe the DG wants to keep this in mind and the department. We have distributed to members which we have considered yesterday. the last year's report to Parliament on the budget. Now, obviously, the minister was a deputy minister in Lens and wouldn't have taken full responsibility for acting on it. But what I'm saying is that we're not expecting ministers that are going to reply to all of these issues. What we are saying that would be useful for our report is if by next, say, Monday, the DG could reply to these things so that we can show, it doesn't matter who's hearing and who constitutes the committee now, it's the same parliament. And our job is to look at what the last committee said last year when it considered the budget and how much the executive has done since then to implement what they, I think the deal is coming in. So I'm just drawing attention to the fact that last year there were some recommendations. So I just want to quickly draw attention to them. But before I, shall I just quickly and then ask members to comment, right? Last year the committee said that National Treasury provide a proper report on the establishment of procurement office. So presumably the DD can reply to that today. Within 6 months of that report last year, there should be a report on the implementation of and the costs associated with the youth employment tax incentive. I'm not sure if that was done, but perhaps you can add a bit there. Then National Treasury provides the House with a report on sustaining the local government finances, ensuring members understanding the efficiency of interventions outlined in the public finance and management budget. SARS provide the House, Acting Commissioner, with a progress report on the process of implementing the automated tax clearance certificate system. SARS is in Duncan Stat South Africa, and the Intellectual Property Commission reports to the House at least twice a year on progress made. Maybe Des, you can report when that was done. SARS reports on its success in collecting the outstanding tax. And SARS reports to the House at least twice a year on progress made with a pilot project at the one-stop border post in Limpopo. Now, I'm not saying you reply to all of this, DG Minister. You know, I'm just saying that for our report, we work by Monday at least. And in a short 50 replies to this thing. And then the budget review and recommendations report, we made various recommendations. Maybe you want to look at that, DG Minister, and also reply so that we include your replies and we will sort of question them further if we want to over the phone and so on. But we will look for another sitting in the second half of the year where before next budget review, because of the special circumstances now in the limit of time, we take further the discussion we've begun now and the written exchanges we have. So those are the general points I just want to raise on behalf of the committee. Do you want to respond now, Mr. Chairperson?
I've actually asked the efficient Cindy to go and I want to emphasize the efficient to go and print the copies of our responses because indeed we have responded to both the committee reports and also the beautiful arts and happened tabled in Parliament. Yes, and she's just going to make copies now, but if you would want a session where we actually talk to those responses, we would be quite happy to do that.
This also because we're a very new committee, apart from Jess van Rooyen, and I think one other, all of us are new. Maybe at this moment, it'll take a few minutes, a quick, there's such a big team here. Minister, you introduce just the senior officials on your side, but before which, maybe from Jess van Rooyen, can we introduce ourselves? Yeah? We also have members of the Appropriation Committee present, right? Is the chair here? No. The work is here. But whoever is here for the appropriations committee will just signal that you're from that committee. For the rest, they're from the standing committee on finance. I guess it's up to you.
Yeah, no, that's why in those returning need to be reorientated. Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, mine is Dave Van Rooyen, and I'm still a whip of the finance committee.
From the ANC. Thank you. I am Dr. Abaza from Appropriations Telecom. ANC.
Marcos Koza, Finance, ANC.
Good morning. My name is Pinky Chikan, member of the committee from the ANC. good morning. Judicial Felix Masham is my name. Member of Finance Committee, deployed by the section.
Good morning. I'm a member of the Finance Committee. I've been here a couple of months, I think from last year. My name is Mankomo Tomile Nkomo. I'm from the Nkata Freedom Party. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sheila Shobekitoli from Appropriate.
Morning. I'm Eunice Nyalongo. I'm talking on appropriation committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lady Manjoka from Appropriation.
My name is Mike Shivambo. I'm from the Economic Freedom Fighters, from the Finance.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson. Other members, my name is David Ross. I represent the Democratic Alliance. Thank you.
Yes, again, Chair. I've got my also very efficient Director General behind me, Mr. Lungisa Fuzile. But perhaps let me just introduce the staff team, and then when the National Treasury comes in, perhaps I can do that, because I wouldn't want us to spend a lot of time. From the staff team, we've got the Acting Commissioner, who is just due for an Oscar. I saw that Linda already wanted to give him one, but he was not quite amenable to that. We've behind him is Mr. Breho, who is our Chief Operations Officer. Very, either you wink or you raise your hand. And behind me, I've got Mr. Ravelle, who is our Chief Customs and Border Manager. Yes. And we've also got our Strategy and Risk Executive, Mr. Peter Ritter. We've got Mr. Cage, who is our media. Where is media? Yes. He is with the other media. We also got Mr. Yorisa Piki, who is our senior specialist program. And Tipu Mbilase, who is group president, strategy and enabling compliance. Where is Tipu? Thank you. And we got Ms. Kumalo here, who is our group executive, human resource. We got Nipa Abbott, legal representative. There is Mamiki Liolo, revenue planning. There she is. Max Kingon, who's our group executive operation. He's also got a license to even harass me. We've also got Mr. Prakash Mangre, who's a group exec. Thank you. From the staff side, that's the team. We tried to reduce the number to the minimum, but we thought we needed to bring people that would be able to respond to some questions that you might have. Thank you.
Do the members want to raise it?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, for the briefing and also instilling some confidence with regards to the commitment to the National Development Plan and posing this enormous challenge in terms of implementing the plan as a priority, because, of course, our main focus as a Parliament should be creating the necessary jobs and addressing the scorching issue of about 8 million people on the outside without jobs. So we have to, in my view, see that we have a good economic growth rate. It's unfortunate that the minister could not give us an indication, but that we have to watch for the medium term budget policy statement in terms of that, because the current situation in South Africa is that progress to a certain extent is stalled, and that we currently experience
perhaps 1.8% or 2% growth, and that we somehow need to have a commitment in terms of addressing this issue of growth, to get growth to a sustainable level where it's not only growth but job creating growth. Minister, but thank you for your commitment to the National Development Plan. I think it's very important. And also, we will also do our little bit to address the issue of unemployment, which is currently in the broader definition of 36%. So, but that brings me to the also the challenge of the, and of course we need to narrow the fiscal deficit. But it brings you also to the challenge of the second true deficit, which is the deficit on the current accounts. And that's, for that we need to install confidence in terms of investment. I think it's very important. And you are, may I just say that we've lately had some remarks from your colleagues in other departments, unfortunately, undermining the confidence in terms of investment in my mind, and that is with regards to the land reform and also the possibility of violating property rights, which is a fundamental cornerstone in our constitution. If this was done, I believe, on a large scale, it could bring to a certain extent serious implications for the economy, as people will not establish the necessary businesses, and also in terms of developing commercial farming in South Africa, that could be very negative for future investments. With regard to the many foreign and domestic investment possibilities, I'd like to have your views in terms of the balance of payments at this point in time, what we can do to strengthen that, and perhaps your efforts in terms of capital raising from the emerging markets, whether you, the Minister, see this as a major challenge in terms of your term being appointed as our new Finance Minister. Thank you, Dave. I think that is what I need to say, but I would like to say, of course, you know, that priority should be that we should not inhibit investments, that inhibiting investments is a bad idea, in fact, and that we should all work together towards the really the important goal of job creation in this country. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I would just like to add on to a statement which is stated here on paper where the Minister actually in the documentation pertaining to the growth, the GDP growth in our country as well as some of the causes of why the GDP has not grown the way it's supposed to have pertaining to the mining strikes as well as the service delivery strikes vis-a-vis a process which the Minister spoke about, which started yesterday, and that was what the Minister stated, that, you know, we just need to close our eyes and raise our heads to show who has actually started putting in paper. My question, Minister, from a genuine, real point of view, how does one influence the other? Because the Minister stated that, you know, we can collect so much, but even if the GDP grows at this point, it won't be a problem. But from a real point of view, how does one process influence the other? Thank you.
Sure, thanks, Chair. Because yesterday we said to the Parliamentary Budget Office that they must closely look into the phenomenon of transfer pricing, particularly with regard to natural resources, minerals. And then we then spoke as well about the committee on tax review that we need to get information about that so that we're updated in terms of what are the findings and what are the mechanisms in place to combat the transfer pricing so that we can move forward. This is simple, that we've got natural resources in South Africa in great health. We've got minerals, but the contribution of a lot of mining into the national fiscus is almost insignificant. I mean, it has never been more than 25 billion rand. That is less than the education budget of KZN or Gauteng. So the whole mining sector can't fund the education of one province in a country which is supposed to be the richest in terms of mineral resources. So we need the Treasury to take us through in terms of what are the mechanisms in place to deal with the phenomenon of transfer pricing, because it's a crisis that not only define the natural resources in South Africa, but the whole continent is facing that crisis? What are we doing about it to deal with those issues? And then obviously there's an issue which I said we must look into with regards to a proper diagnosis of what constrains economic expansion and growth, because I don't think that the aspects that are being identified are the genuine issues that constrain economic growth. The issues of strikes, I don't think that is a major contribution. I don't think the global economic slowdown has recognized other parts of South Africa. And what it applying on South Africa, what are the structural issues that constrain growth and what is to be done with regards to that particular aspect? So those are some of the things that we need to discuss. And I'm sure that without narrowing it to parties and politics, we can find consensus in terms of the structural issues that we have to address. And then apply proper remedies of what they should happen to expand the South African economy, because it's in the benefit of everyone to do so. It's specifically some of the issues that we had spoken about yesterday. Thanks.
Another question, please.
Yes.
All right, over to the minister. Can I suggest that obviously some of the issues that are raised are very weighty, and it's not as if we expect Minister that we're going to have a full comprehensive reply right now. If you can signal some sort of shorthand, so to speak, reply, and then over the next few months we can identify these issues. The other thing I wanted to say is yesterday the committee did say that I think there are some views that were expressed by Floyd that his party is an issue, and that's fine. This is a multi-party democracy. But as I understood the consensus yesterday, Minister, it was that as an appropriate state, there are, and Parliament has guided us, so there are structures that the executive sets up. And those structures have to answer to the executive. Sometimes the cabinet has to apply its mind to the proposal of these commissions and structures before a minister can bring those issues to the parliament and the broader public. So we're not sure about some of these structures, what exactly the status is and so on. So we are aware that while we are right to pose these questions, the work being done by the executive on these issues may still be work in progress. So we're sensitive to that. But the questions that Floyd raised, I think the entire ability spells in some form or another, should be addressed over time. So in short, we're not expecting a full comprehensive reply, but there is signaling Minister Beijing, King Commission, that these are some of the issues over the next few months, as time allows, we would like addressed.
Thanks, sir. I mean, some of the issues raised, answers actually are also in the presentations we're about to make. I'm not sure to what extent they can actually, but I mean, in general, the commitment about the National Development Plan is a government commitment. It's not a commitment by the Minister of Finance or any other minister. It's a commitment, and the President has said in the State of the Nation address that in tabling our MTSF and in the engagements that we are having with the President and Ministry, it directly talks to how aligned your MTSF is to the National Development Plan. So you have no reason to doubt the result of the commitment of the state to the implementation of the National Development Plan. Therefore, we would actually be seeing ministers coming to before Parliament to table their statements as we do. Also, during the budget votes, that's one of the things that is actually going to be quite pronounced. And it's also not like we actually, it's a new thing. You know, in our budget review, I always refer members, and we did that when we tabled our budgets in February. We referred members to page 4 of the budget review, where we were clear on some of the work that is already underway in implementing the NDP, where we actually had identified 10 areas where the NDP is already being implemented. Therefore, that should count for confidence building, that should also count for a platform where we need to work together across the party line as well. But this relationship I was talking about between Parliament and ourselves is going to be critical in making sure that we are able to implement it. That would build the confidence. It's not only what the executive says, but it's also what we all say that actually fits into the public arena. The issue of foreign investment, but also our domestic investment, the two go hand in hand. You'll find that when we do explain what our various programs achieve this, we will demonstrate that we are on track, but that we need to do more. All the points raised with regard to our fiscal and the current account deficit will be addressed also when we deal with the Treasury strategic plan. Mankomo spoke about the GDP growth and relationship between this and the tax morality. I think it all borders on its morality. And that is why I said when we do this, we need to close our eyes, because some people don't want to say here that they themselves. You know, I I know the story from a church where those who do not make their offering are the ones who make the loudest noise about the pastor who has abused their money. And those that do put in their money actually hold the pastor accountable for the money they have put. So I think that's the principles that I think should also count. But we do need to work hard at the tax morality in our country, and the commissioner will be talking to the initiatives also that we are actually putting in place in order to improve and to close the tax gap, because the fact of the matter is that we actually haven't reached the point where we collect all the money that is due to the state. And if we close the tax gap, we will be able to raise more revenue without even increasing taxes, but also even when the economy is underperforming. The points raised by Honorable Shivambu on the Parliamentary Budget Office, we are working closely with the Parliamentary Budget Office and in responding to the issues that members of Parliament raised through the Budget Office. He goes on to talk about the issue of the tax savings committee. We have received the first report from the tax committee. We will be receiving the last one before the end of the year, but by the time we go to the MCPPS, we will have received most of them. We talk mainly to issues. Just yesterday, I got one that talks to the first one we got was on the small business. We then have received one on the base erosion, and I would imagine transfer pricing into that part. The base erosion and the profit shifting, where we actually have received some recommendations. We will be working on that. And the issue about the mineral resources, that one will be out before the end of the year. About the contribution, maybe the commissioner will be able to share with you what the contribution of the mining industry into our revenue base. And our understanding of the constraints to growth, I'm sure during these 5 years we will have an interesting engagement on our understanding of what the constraints really are and whether our articulation of what we view as the constraints to growth are aligned. And working together, we really hope we will be able to arrive at some of the solutions that might have eluded us in all these years and continue to elude another of our economies. The bigger ones, you know, when we talk about how other economies are growing, we also need to look at from what base. If you are growing from a lower base, and you know, even if you grow at a much lower absolute number than us, you would still be growing in terms of in percentage. We have a lot of work in our hands, and working with this committee, I'm sure we will achieve a lot. But as you said, you don't expect comprehensive responses. When we deal with both the SARS and the National Treasury, some of the answers actually much more pronounced and specific will come out.
saying that something before the SARS commissioner and the coming. I'm not saying that you can answer all the things. I think the themes that emerged in yesterday's meeting, having heard the minister, firstly, I think it's both Parliament and the executive's responsibility to ensure that the NDP is implemented vigorously and effectively. There's substantial consensus across all parties. There are differences, obviously, on aspects of this, but in a country of our diversity and our challenges, that's almost inevitable, not least within the ANC-led alliance. So I think Parliament also has a role in this regard. One of our preoccupations, Minister, DG, Acting Commissioner, and others here, will be to see a greater synergy between the NDP and the budget, obviously. And presumably, in the medium-term budget policy statement, we will see greater synergy now that the medium-term strategic framework is being finalized. So we will monitor, but we will also contribute towards, as you said, that synergy. It's not going to happen overnight. And there's 34, 35 departments, bringing all of them into line. Some of them are being divided, some of them are being converged, like justice and Christian services. I think some of us at least are quite sympathetic to that. The second point is that the ANC has put on the agenda at its Mangaung conference a second, more radical phase of the transition. Obviously, precisely what that means is something that is being spelled out and will constitute giving substance to. Now, here again, the government will set out its views. Parliament also needs to engage around this, sometimes with you, sometimes with the public, and whoever. Because I think what emerged yesterday was the researchers gave us an overview of the constraints of national treasuries identified to economic growth and development and job creation. And obviously, there are differences within the committee, depending on which party you come from. But I think there was general agreement that the things that are identified by National Treasury, what general agreement, I think the majority view was, are contributing towards innovating growth. But they are not a full enough, adequate enough explanation for the structural constraints. And we need to look more at more fundamental reasons. I think the point that was made by Freud, and agreed to by most, if not all of us, was yesterday, was even if we do all these things, say we have better labor relations and substantially reduced crime, if we sort out our energy problems and so on, if we do all the things that are set out in the budget documents, and most of us feel, of course, the economy will grow. But will it grow in ways and to the extent that meets the broader goal set out in the NDP? That's debatable. So we think the issue of the structural constraints and structural transformation of the economy are set on the agenda, both by the ANC and the government, and Parliament obviously also by adopting the NDP. And the issue will arise in various forms in Parliament through different committees, the Economic Development Committee and other committees too. So in short, those are two major themes, the one around, and they're related, the increasing convergence of the budget and the NDP. Presumably, Treasury will be far more rigorous and far more thorough about representations made to it for funds by ensuring it is consistent with what the NDP sets out as a framework. So we will monitor that and we will contribute to the extent it's appropriate for Parliament too. The second thing is that we have to look at more fundamental economic transformation and the structural constraints to growth that go beyond what are said to us by the researchers to be Treasury's argument. But that we will ourselves need to spell out, Minister, to you and the DG and others more carefully. What is it we as a committee are saying could be done? And at some appropriate stage, we might want to consider it really a proposal for us to apply our mind in the committee, working with other committees, engaging with the public also, to ask what is it that you think that can be done to grow this economy in the way we all want it, or at least most of us want to go. So those are the major themes that are emerging, having listened to members in the committee yesterday, listening to the minister this morning. Okay. So you had a reasonable summary, committee members. Would you want to add anything? Yes, others?
Of course. Sure, thank you. I'm sorry, I wasn't there yesterday, but there was something that I really wanted the minister to probably pronounce on, and that is the banking sector in South Africa. With the downgrading of the downgrading of banks, and also the fact that we've seen the banks diversifying into products such as funeral policies and things like that. I just want to know whether is there an attempt to try and get the bank of because they are actually very, very, very important in stimulating growth and actually assisting, especially with the small businesses, in really finding a way of changing the mindset, probably more of an activist bank kind of view where you look at the economy and you look at the challenges that you have in the country and you start playing that role. Because to me, it's worrying that the banks are getting more and more into less productive kind of activities like your funeral policies and so forth. That's why you see them selling more and selling the products that are saying, come to us with your problem as a small business so that we can assist you. And obviously, it's something that sits with your minister. The second thing that I also wanted to check is that whether there is any collective response by the economy cluster, not just by the Treasury, but obviously the economy cluster, to respond to this the contracting economy. Because to me, the way it looks like is that, yes, I agree that we can't reduce the problems only to the minor stress and so forth, but we also need to look at what are the underlying factors that are making all these workers feel entitled to actually make these demands that they are making. You probably have issues of housing as well. I know for a fact that there are people who are very poor in employment, people who can't access decent housing, yet they are in employment. Our current state guarantee is about 300,000, and you can't even find a house for 300,000 in the township. And which means that you have nurses, you have teachers, you have policemen, you have your mine workers, you have all those people that can't be covered by a low-cost housing scheme, but also at the same time, they can't be covered by the current regime of your housing subsidy, I mean access to the housing markets and so forth. So I'm saying, I just want to know whether there is a response that is looking beyond just dealing firefighting kind of response where you're dealing with the problem now and you know you are reacting, but to really look at long-term, a sustainable way of looking at the kind of challenges that we have. Because one, this morning I actually had one of the employees, mine, was saying, I still live in a shack. And despite the fact I've been employed for over 85 years. Now, obviously there is something wrong there. He doesn't earn less than 2,500. He earns slightly more than that, but he still is in a shack. He can see people below him living a better life, if you like. And so I'm saying there are more issues than just what needs to happen. Thank you.
You know, I must indicate I do have issues that I want to raise as far as our domestic and global economic outlook is concerned. But I am worried that if I start raising those issues, we might end up not even getting a first presentation. Now, my simple advice,
trying to mean, I think the idea is to signal to the minister in particular, because he's here, some of the issues that are preoccupying the committee. It's unfair to expect the minister to reply fully. But what we are signaling, he's a political head. We're not going to see him for a while. We understand he, you know, you can be a deputy. I was a deputy. It didn't mean if I took over the ministry overnight, I'm going to be familiar with everything. Now, it's nice being a deputy because you coach along. And, you know, whenever there's something good, you take credit for it, as I often did. Whenever the ministry is under pressure, you sort of say, well, you know, I'm not the minister, you know. So he's in that situation. He's deputy. He can say exactly what he might have uttered. Well, I, obviously, and I'm not going to hide this, I'm human. I served as a deputy minister, and at times I was very irritated with my minister, whoever he was, And, you know, in the study group, I was saying, well, I'm not a minister, he's a complex minister, really, by the way. So, let that, all these things happen. Minister, you don't write about these things the business day. I don't think readers are interested in all that. The crazy thing is that nowadays, we must signal to the minister that these are the issues. Over the next 3 to 6 months, there's that we want to engage with him around. What we are doing here is like almost like a brainstorming session of the chairperson, because the more I listen to the committee members and the minister, already the elements of our program are emerging, which is what we're going to do, minister, around the middle of August. We're going to have a one-day session, or half-a-day session, hopefully on a Sunday, where everybody will turn up enthusiastically, because that's the real test, not the substance, but the process there, and then we'll engage with you and say, look, over the next 6 to 8 months, up till the beginning of the next financial year, these are the things, so 8 things we want done. So yes, signal it. He's not going to reply fully, but at least a way of getting him, the minister, to get a sense of where we might be going.
No, in fact, the issues that I'm going to raise are related to the presentation themselves. So I'll be very much happy if we get into the presentation. Thank you. The presenter are here with us. They've been asked for the past week. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
But then in that case, to the minister to reply to Makosi and then the acting commissioner. And having no tea, by the way, because from 10 to 1, we can survive without tea, okay? There's no need for a tea break. And in any case, you know what, the tea break is near the 15 minutes that it's allocated to. So you know what, something the chairperson can rule is no tea, no coffee. If you want, you can slide up, go and get your tea and coffee and come and sit back and don't disrupt us. Okay.
Thank you again, Chair. The point you made also earlier before Makosi, another caller, was that we have a collective responsibility to the implementation of government's program. In this instance, the NDP, supported by our National Growth Path, our Industrial Policy Action Plan. Therefore, I would also want to submit that we all can't claim the monopoly of the solution to all the problems, because the problems of the country lie in all our departments as well. But the lead department in this sector, and as you have it in the legislation that establishes the National Treasury, we try to focus on what it is that is within our purview without claiming to be able to do everything on behalf of the other departments. The issue of the banking sector, interestingly, Comrade Makosi, yesterday the Deputy President led a delegation that comprised of ourselves with the banking sector, because it's a continuation of what we've had with the previous minister. And I can assure you, the point he's raising about the relationship between the minister and the Deputy Minister. I always tell the story, Chair, that there are submissions I have signed as Deputy Minister for the minister to sign. I've sent them back to the Deputy Minister to apply his mind. So that explains what you've just been talking about. But one of the points that Makosi raised is with regards to the gap market and the number of initiatives that actually some have already served before Parliament in relation to the mortgage default insurance that cover the gap market, to those that and too little to qualify for loans with the banks, but those that earn too much to qualify for the housing subsidies. The mortgage default insurance has already gone to Parliament, and it is intended to deal precisely with that particular challenge. And I would imagine that these are some of the things that we'll continue engaging with. There are quite a number of other interventions and initiatives that government have taken. The issue of diversifying to our products, we recently had had the opportunity to explain, Ismail Mamani, who was responsible for our financial regulation, with regards to the issue of the other products that the banking institutions also do sell in diversifying, but also looking at how we promote this financial inclusion in the financial sector in general. There are also a number of initiatives that the government is is leading on. Mr. Mamoniat, when we get to that point, we'll also do that when we get to the treasury presentation. But first, let me stop here, Chairperson, so that you can get the resolutions.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. A way of introduction to the presentation. For the past 7 years, one of our main programs has been the modernization of our system, our railway system. We are at the tail end of that program. But of course, when you get to the end, and it's questionable whether you ever get to the end, you have to start all over again. But for this phase, and the way we have defined it, we are close to the tail end. And that modernization has yielded enormous benefits for taxpayers who now find it easy to complete and submit their tax returns. But moreover, it gives us access to huge amounts of data. And we can study trends and we can know very quickly what's happening. For example, as of now, 180,000 people have filed their tax returns. So we can, by the minute, get an update. So one of the things I'm signaling is that as we present the strategic plan to you, that we are looking at what is the next phase as we get to the tail end of the business phase. And importantly here, we're looking at how we balance our education, our service, and our enforcement. We're also looking more intensely inside the business to see which parts of our business would require more attention and effort than we have given it before. We're also going to place great emphasis on raising the technical capability of our staff. And the reason is simply that because so much is now automated, all the, let's call it step work, done by a machine, and what human beings have to deal with are the exceptions, and the exceptions are more complex. And last but not least, we will be refining our approach to segments of the taxpayers, especially small business. So, I'll then start with the presentation itself. And I'm going to go through it rapidly because I want to give you enough time to ask questions. There's the agenda. And then we can go quickly to slide 3, and I don't intend to spend time on slide 3 because it's what is in the law. That's the mandate that's described by the law, and it catches the main point. Slide 4 is a slide you have seen before many times, but it sets out our outcomes, and that increased customs compliance, increased tax compliance, and then the increased ease and fairness of doing business with staff. And lastly is an increased cost effectiveness and efficiency. I'm going to explain some of these things in the next slide. Which is slide 5. And some of this is described in the strategic plan that you have in pages 29 to 31. Most revenue services in the world use what is called the compliance strategy. So, firstly, it says that we want voluntary compliance. And we need to encourage this.
Let me say on our part, we need to create a system that deals fairly with those in it and minimizes leakages. And that's why we have spent much of the last 6 or 7 years in trying to build a formidable system. What it is saying here is that individual efforts that we've been making before that have been successful, but they've been successful for the event. It's been very difficult to keep people inside the system. But we have reached a situation now when you are inside the system, with the transparency that there is in the system, the data that we can see very, very quickly if compliance is being disturbed. The third point that I'm saying is if you've got a good system, then you need to place an increasing focus on bringing those outside the system into it. Go to slide 6. Into a little bit more depth to say these are the three main levers that we can pull. It's education, it's service, and enforcement. The saying here, if you want good compliance, we need to explain to people why they pay tax. We need to explain what happens to the money. And we need to do it in a way that is easy, understandable. Service is saying, make it as easy as possible for people to comply. And this applies generally. If it's difficult to pay something or to comply with something, then people are very, very likely to turn around and go somewhere else, or in this case, not pay their tax. And if you've done the education part well and you've done the service part well, then you must have a credible enforcement capability. And we emphasize here that this is not about punishing individuals. This is about demonstrating the fairness of the system, especially to the people that already comply. Turn over the slide to slide 7. Again, in a little bit more depth. We've got some way to go in this, but we've begun the journey. We need to differentiate between amongst sectors of the taxpayer. We need to understand how they behave, and we need to customize our responses to the taxpayer. The next point is saying that the way in which taxpayers feel us must be palpable. And how do we do that? We do that by touching a certain percentage of the taxpayers. That's the breadth part. So there should be an expectation that I can be touched. My neighbor was touched, or somebody in my family was touched, or somebody at work was touched. We need to cover a certain percentage of the taxpayers. The depth part is saying, if you are non-compliant, and especially if you are deliberately non-compliant, we will have a technical capability to deal with that occurrence in depth. And it doesn't matter if it takes 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, and it doesn't matter if you employ 6 senior counsel, we will stay the distance. The last point is that in all of these things, you can't solve all of these problems one by one. We've got to look at leverage points so that we can have a multiplying impact. Then what we're saying is that we need to have joined up governments. We need to work closely with other government institutions. And indeed, some of you may know already, we work very closely with Home Affairs on the World Cup. We're working closely with them now on identity management. We're doing some work with the CIPC on the registrations of companies. It's in our interest that there be a sound management of the identity of individuals and companies. And in fact, we're slowly, it's taken a long time, but we're slowly proceeding with what we call where we can have an integrity of the basic data of the state. The last point is saying that we should be trying very hard, all of us, to ensure that SARS, its systems and its people, obviously, is an institution of integrity. Once people begin to doubt this institution, we'll be in trouble. And this is not just about a person in the front line receiving a bribe or something like that. It's also about how accurate our accounts, how fair are we. So that's a little bit more depth. And we think that actually this has wider application. It can be applied in even to compliance to traffic laws, can be applied to crime in general. The next slide is just trying to capture everything together in nice color. So there's a revenue, and it says if we improve compliance, you get the revenue outcome. And that the lever that we pull are education, service, and enforcement. And what's very important there is that we get the balancing right between education, service, and enforcement. And perhaps let me just say here is that it's not a general balancing, although there can be a general balancing, but you can begin to look into a segment or sector and say, in this sector, is it generally compliant? And if people are not compliant, why are they not compliant? Is it an issue of education? Is it because we're not providing a good service? Or is it because we've done all of those things? And that area is a difficult area. People don't want to. And then you just balance how you respond. And then, of course, key in this is the way in which we manage segments and the way in which we manage channel. And then, finally, people capability. Everything was from people capability. The next slide brings us a little bit closer to what is the challenges now. Over the years, the trends have shown improving compliance levels, and later on we'll show you a slide that says roughly for many, many years now, revenue has increased at an average of 11% per annum. But presently, the slower economic growth will place pressure on that type of performance. And some of the big threats are the tax base erosion and proper shifting, of which transfer pricing definitely is one. In the next slide, don't hang it, but in the next slide we will talk at a high level about what we are doing on this matter. Then there's the growing illicit economy. Cigarette smuggling, drugs, the mixing of alcohol, counterfeit goods. And then there's the last point that there's a growing disquiet about how people are spending money, and obviously there's a connection between tax paying and how money is used. And that's a challenge, and that's something we had in our strat plan for 2 or 3 years to say that this is something that the risk that we have to manage. The we there meaning across all of government. Then, yes, the way in which we respond. At a high level, very, very important that we maintain and improve the public trust in SARS. And I should say a very important consideration here should be, although I know it's difficult, is that when there is litigation or a difference of view with SARS, our case must always be, let's deal with this thing properly. SARS must deal with it properly too. But let's not undermine the institution. But on the part of SARS, we must deal fairly with people, even-handedly, transparently, and consistently. And obviously, we aim to maintain and improve the compliance levels. And with the data that we're getting now, in a better position to respond earlier than before. In all of these things, I just want you to note that it's a human tendency, if we leave a vacuum, it gets filled. So if people are non-compliant and we don't respond quickly, after a while, they come to the conclusion we're not present. And therefore, we'll be responding earlier than we used to. On the illicit trade, I want to point out in general that this is obviously a problem the whole of government has to face. We have a role to play in it. And over the years, it's a front on which we've been quite active, dealing with the tobacco smuggling, dealing with a number of people in organized crime, like Ratchet, for example. You would have read in the newspapers that we are involved in that matter. But key to this is we need to understand this illicit activity as a business. There are markets, there are suppliers, there are logistics, there's a price that people are prepared to pay for it, etc. And if we understand the value chain as a whole of government, then it should become easier to see how we can choke that type of activity. Then combating unacceptable avoidance, and obviously issues of transfer pricing, all of that are part of that. Key to that, of course, is to have the capability. In dealing with some of the issues of avoidance, they're highly technical questions, and usually we're outgunned by the capability that the big companies have and the huge reserves of the cash that they have. But we do have a growing capability, for example, in transfer pricing. And last year, we identified, say, four companies, I obviously cannot name them, who we suspect of transfer pricing activity. One of them, we finalized the matter not long ago, and they paid us an extra 3.5 billion. The other three we are continuing to deal with. And then the last point about joint up governments. Go to the next slide. Chair, this slide is in one slide tells you the whole business of SARS. The three levers are on top: education, service, and enforcement. And below that are the core processes: education, registration, filing declaration, dispute management. On the right what is more the enforcement part, receivable management around debt, audit investigation, and the judicial process. Under those, in those small blocks, but if you have the chance, you'll be able to see it, are some of our key data. So, for example, in the middle one under service, it tells you how many branches we have. It tells you we've got mobile taxis. We have actually 12, but 9 of them are actually active at the moment. 3 are in being serviced. It tells you ports of entry. It tells you about our channels. It tells you about our register, transactions. It gives you our operating expenses, which is 0.97% of revenue collected. Gives you our headcount. On the left, it tells you what we're doing on education and outreach. On the right, it tells you about the heavier part of enforcement that we do. But going back to the middle, you will see there's something called tax entities auditor. 1.8 million. Okay. This is the black part of the strategy. This is the amount of people that we touch. We send them letters to say verify us. Or we give them a call. Or we ask some of them to come to the office, etc. The right-hand side is obviously the depth of the strategy. We turn the page, page 12, gives you a glance. What revenue we have to collect this year and the next 2 years. It tells you what's the year-on-year nominal growth. And below that is the SARS budget and how it's moving and what's the expected inflation. The next page just gives you the same thing pictorially. And then on slide 14 gives you the revenue composition, what are the main tax cuts, and the marginal rates. Slide 15, I referred to earlier, which shows the year-on-year growth for many, many years. And slide 16, which is the last one, it says this would be among our key priorities. We do lots more than this. These are some of the things. And in fact, as some of you might know, it becomes very, very difficult to know what to leave out. But these are amongst the key things. So the technical capability I've referred to again. The next point is the single registration of taxpayers across government. You may have read, or you may know, that we, in the last, I think, 3 months or 4 months, have made some progress on this. We have separated out personal data and demographic data from tax type data. This means that when people have to register for a tax type, they do not have to provide the same information to us over and over again. This data that we have, we check with the CIPC and we check with Home Affairs. The next one is that you know the customs bill has been before Parliament. It will be an act soon. And just like with the Tax Amendment Act, it's going to require us a lot of activity, a lot of energy over the next 3 or 4 years to put the Act into place. And then, very important, the WTO Trade Facilitation Agreements at Bali have also created a huge workload for us. I'm told there's a memo going to cabinet soon on GTI setting up the implications for us. I refer to the refined approach to taxpayer segments, and we want to give special attention to small business. The next one is about tax practitioners. You may have read yesterday, for example, that we had 38,000 practitioners since the Act has been passed, and there's an accreditation process by their own institutions and by staff. That number is dropped to 14,500. The whole point here is that the citizens or taxpayers should have confidence in the practitioners. And equally important is that we should be able to place greater reliance on the work they do. And that's a great multiplier effect if we can have it. We are in that era where people are more vocal about their tax matters. We have the ombudsman. We have moderate growth in the economy. So there will be increasing differences, disputes, etc. And see this against the backdrop that I raised before, that human beings have to deal now with more complex matters than before. All this would mean that we must improve the way in which we manage our complaints. The almost last point is that in order to deal with base erosion, profit shifting, what is very important is the exchange of information between revenue authorities. We play a leading role in this. One of our members of the executive, Mr. Percy Lowe, is the chairman of the Global Tax Forum, and that's why he is not here this morning, Chair. We are part of a group of 40 countries that are piloting the exchange of information, the automatic exchange of information. This would be a big boost for us in understanding the way in which the money is moved between businesses under the same umbrella. In fact, today 60-70% of the trade in the world takes place between connected business entities, and that's the difficulty about transfer pricing, because this takes place between connected entities. And lastly, a lot of our work is done at the border, and we have to work very, very hard together with other government institutions to enhance our border management. Here to finish, in the course of this, I tried to answer some of the issues. I think I dealt with some surprising, obviously at late stage we can deal with them in greater detail. On the TCCs, the first phase of the TCCs, tax clearance certificate, that was one of the best, the automated. The first phase is in place. So the automated system is there. The second phase is a very, very important phase that we are on the threshold, which is to change some of the regulations that would enable enable us and enable all government departments to ensure that before they make a payment, they can check whether an entity is confined at that moment. Because the way the law is written now is that you are compliant once and you get a certificate. 3 months later, you can be non-compliant. So there are certain improvements that we're looking for, and once that comes, we'll go into the second phase. And that should tighten up that, that whole system. Then on the pilot of the OSBP, that's the one stop order post, as I understand it, all the legal requirements on our side are done. We are waiting for Mozambique, and about 2 months ago we signed between the two revenue authorities MOU. They are doing their part of it. But I wish to point out that in many respects, some of the facilities and some of the activities for the one-stop are already in place. For example, the pedestrian building that is required for the one-stop is already there. And early stages of exchange of data between the Mozambican authorities and ourselves already taking place. Let's see what are the other things that I have to do. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, yeah, I think that also just, if I may, tries also to respond to some of the issues, and that's why the Commissioner had to go to that point. And perhaps also on the automated tax clearance certificates, the Commissioner mentions the point that one of the things we're trying to do is to ensure that SARS is trying to do is to ensure that compliance is not a once-off thing, but you monitor compliance throughout the process, right up to tax collection also. Because you find that the state deals with a number of people who continue to be non-compliant in terms of paying their taxes. So it's one of those compliance measures that are intended, and they will come before the committee just to explain how we seek to do that so that the government departments do business with people who check that they are compliant, but also that they also comply with also paying their fair share of their taxes much earlier than only dealing with them when they have been found to be on the wrong side. Thanks, Chair. That's the presentation from SARS.
Thank you, Minister. On to your questions, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me appreciate the comprehensive presentation that was made by the Commissioner and the Minister. And just specifically on the issues of SARS, Chair, I think the approach by SARS to modernize and bring automation in the system is a very brilliant one. And I think I like the element that also spoke to education. And I think outreach to public on how SARS wants to efficiently deal with some of these things and educate our people, and for them to see it as a more complex issue than a punitive measure on how people must respond to SARS. It's a very important one. There are two areas that I want to pick up and bring to the attention of SARS, and like you said, Chair, I think because I'm a new member on this committee, everybody will pardon me for that. On the border management, which is something that has been prioritized by SARS and which is very important, the issue of modernization and automation is very critical in that element. And I'm speaking here specifically to Bainbridge Border Post. Speaking under correction, I think it's one of the busiest inland border posts into South Africa and into Africa. And for quite some time, there has never been a scanner in that area. And if you look at the present... I'm from Limpopo. I'm in the MSC of Roads and Transport, and the MSC for Economic Development. So, now... Now, one of the things that the commissioner had also pointed out is the growing illicit trade. And he pointed out to cigarettes, illegal trading of cigarettes into South Africa. The biggest victim, speaking of that correction, is Musina Bainbridge Border Post. You don't have a scanner? And some time ago, there was big explosives towards Zambia, and unfortunately it happened within Limpopo before they reached the border. And how many of those go through the border unnoticed? But, and on the hand side, it also says, as much as we want to increase on revenue and be able to implement our NDP, we're losing out on revenue based on some of these things. And I think it will be very important for SARS to really attend to the issue of Bainbridge Border Post. And if Bainbridge is not attended to, what about your Derdepoort or Groblersberg? And these are small ones. So there everything goes unnoticed. The last issue, which is very close to my heart, Honourable Minister, is the one-stop border post. And I'm happy with the progress made so far. It will be very important for the Department of Finance to also talk to the DTI, because DTI has also declared some strategic areas as special economic zones. Musina is one of them. And to have a one-stop border post will be very, very instrumental in assisting the flow of economy and all other things that can really enhance trade between South Africa and the neighboring countries. So I see the pace from finance and SARS doing well, but the interface between department and other interests groups or critical departments that relate to some of these things will be critical, so that the pilot phase is correct and then we expand on other areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The first question that I have is, what are we doing as far as to keep those that are already within the system? And I'm referring more to your small businesses, because most of the time you'll find that the business, small businesses, they get into the system, but because of the government, and government is a huge culprit in this case, the government is not paying them on time or something like that, they start revolting. And that also is going to be impacting negatively on this automated tax compliance, because you will actually find that the small businesses, because of the small, you are actually unintentionally encouraging monopoly capital to continue monopolizing, because the small businesses, you will actually find that government does not adhere to the 30%, 30 days policy. They always pay beyond that, sometimes after 9 months, after 10 months. In the meantime, They already have submitted their invoices, and obviously they expected that by this time they should have done their tax returns and so forth and so forth, and find that they haven't done that. Now the second question is, have we done an impact assessment on this system, especially with respect to the small business trader? Then the final one that I wanted to know is a matter that is close to my heart, Pinky. And that is, we declared this century the African century, and SARS has the best tax collection system in the continent. What is SARS doing to exchange this best practice with the rest of the continent? Because the more we announce we are neglecting these systems issues in Africa, they are putting pressure on us in South South Africa, if they actually start putting their systems in place, and you will actually find that it will lessen the burden that we are carrying currently. And relating to that is also about your survivalist trader who crosses the border on a daily basis. Is there special dispensation for those? I'm talking about the Zimbabwean women, for example, who come here just to sell their arts and crafts and so forth. Is there something, is there special dispensation for your survivalist trader who is crossing, who is coming here to trade with you?
Before I come to this, I'm just thinking of a protest issue, Minister TG. There are so many questions being asked. There will never be answers in here. So what I'm suggesting is on our side, and then piece of thought is just, can you write on the questions that members are also asking? Presumably on the side of the TG and the Acting Commissioner, there are people taking questions. I don't know if in details of how it's done. Right? So what we do is, look, in our report to Parliament, we can't leave the questions hanging in the air, as it were. And we can't expect a team on this side to reply. I mean, the issues that have been raised now will take another 45 minutes at least, right? And at the pace my friend here speaks, it might take an hour. As wonderful as the input was, he said brief input, but he doesn't say as weak or even brief or pace. But what I'm saying is, look, Paul, you see, we don't want to cover the same ground. You know, I've been hearing committee for longer than 400 years. I know what happened. The same questions come up from our side, not least for myself. So we want to not operate like that anymore. All these questions were closely asked, NPG have asked. You deal with it, the brief answer here. We write something, it's not complete. Then people raise the same 6 months from now, and 12 months from now. It's all my course here, don't ask. So we deal with these issues and get them done. So I think we need our side to get the questions proper, your side to note the question, note your replies, and then add to it, right? I don't see any reason why, unless there's a parliamentary rule against this, when we do the draft report, we send it to them to say, here are your answers to some of these questions. What's wrong with that? Is there parliamentary rule against that? We are asking questions. They are deciding for us. Think about it. In the special circumstances we currently are in, because I'm worried about management. And what the Christians are very good for a new chairperson. Yes, I'm not like you, right? You may be bored. You may say, oh, man, these are the same Christians I asked 2 months ago. Tough, bitch. You know, you're the only guy left in the ANC, yeah? And it's really, you know, solving a longer baby's life is, you can get bored, right, for the first few weeks. But they are all new here. So I really like the questions, and I don't even answer them. So can you agree on the fourth issue? And for this time around, at least, you send up the drafts and say, can you put any answers here that you want? The second thing I want to say, I'm coming to you now, is that we have got, as a matter of interest, sent to Minister, the Speaker, Sisu, on the 7th of April, from Kevin Godin, the then Minister, the replies to the lead of our redistributing this. When I spoke to Alan this morning, committee members, it struck me suddenly, I got up this morning, it struck me actually yesterday what you sent to. What we have always done before when I take committees, we always ask the minister to reply to what was asked previously. And when I asked Alan, well, why didn't you tell me already a reply? The point that was replied to by the 7th of April to the beautiful hour. I think you're looking for the reply closely after the budget. But the purpose of this committee, Minister, is going to be what I think you did when you were the chair, which is each time a minister appears on a budget review, just take us through, although there have been replies, and we'll monitor now this committee. Yeah, there's a new committee, so we don't know what to say for the largest committee. So we have got a reply. Here it is, yeah. I think we should give members an opportunity to look at this. And then at the next engagement we have with you here, about 6-8 weeks from now, those of you in the minute, the DG here, we cover that ground. The B triple R and the reply to the budget review report, which I think is starting to trend. But the question I want to raise from our side is that, is this a norm? It's written to the Speaker. That's the norm. But it might be useful to CC it to the committee chairperson. I don't know if that can be done, because look, you only got to us now. But that's something Parliament needs to apply in time. So suppose the Minister writes to the Speaker, and the Speaker also sends it to us. But it seems to me we need to engage. We have a meeting, isn't it, Friday, Saturday, this? Maybe at that meeting we raise questions like this. But it should be CC to the chairperson. Oh, it needs to be dedicated. All right, that's covered. Okay, that's covered. Okay. Over to you, Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would
would like to thank the minister and especially the commissioner for his input. My area of questions would have started with a lot of the issues around the illicit trade, but Honorable Pinky did quite well on it. May I just find out about one matter which was brought up by the commissioner, and that was the matter of the 40 countries where we are also part of those countries in dealing with issues of exchange of information and all those issues about tax. Exactly how much of that are we getting out? I know that the chairperson said, please write to us. I would like to hear more about it, noting again another slide which was addressed by the commissioner, which said there are global trends of tax-based erosion and profit shifting through aggressive avoided and evasion schemes. I think those are some of the areas which are also impacting heavily and which the 40 countries are discussing. It is quite a good move, but one would like to hear more about it so that we get the know-how as to how much we are benefiting. And noting what has been coming out in our papers recently, I think as early as last week, or was it before last, there was an area where about 3 billion of drugs, or basically the ingredients towards the making of drugs was found. And it keeps happening in all these areas. And apparently those are some of the issues that we need to talk about, the cigarettes, the drugs, and the medicines, and a lot of other issues. So I would really appreciate the information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to take this opportunity to congratulate the minister and for his appointment. And I hope you are going to revive Caledon, because it was your baby and it really empowered a lot of members of parliament. I hear staff talking about the collection of fair share, and I come from Hoedspruit in Limpopo at the end of Mpumalanga, and there are trucks that travel from Phalaborwa through Hoedspruit and Bushbuckridge through Nelspruit to Mozambique. The roads are terrible, and I always ask myself, do we collect enough tax from these people to compensate the repairs of the roads? So I would like to know about that.
Thank you, Chair. I was encouraged that my colleague was satisfied with the progress made on the one-stop order post, and obviously she's an expert on it. But this has been on the agenda for quite a while, and I believe, if I understand correctly, that there's still a problem in terms of the memo of understanding, and perhaps we would like to have the reasons for that. It's, in terms of the lead times, yes, we would like just to know what progress we can, and where the problem really lies. Chairperson, my second comment is just a compliment to the efforts in terms of the operating model that you use in terms of addressing complaints at all levels in staff. And just to note then that today I've also met Mark Kinnon, and then Barry Hall was addressing several tax queries that I have sent through to the office, and really addressing the minister on a daily basis. And you can register the complaint the morning with him, and the evening you have a reply. And indeed, we need to commend staff for this doing here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As Taylor indicated, I went through the plan as expected, but I also looked thoroughly into the performance plan as a tool to ensure that the strategic plan is implemented. And I got a series of questions, and you have to bear with me. My first question is around the issue of critical skills vis-a-vis the consulting cities that are in a way ballooning. I know there's a commitment to reduce such, but looking into, I mean, the figures, I'm not convinced that the commitment is enough. Because if I'm to be specific, Chair, we are currently spending around starts spending around plus minus 288 million on such. And your commitment to deal with such in the 2016-2017 leads us to 205, plus minus 205 million. As a reduction of plus minus 32 million. I'm not sure if this is a union commitment. I mean, today, with this balloon consultancy fees. Now, it brings me to the real question, the core question that I want to pose. Is the commitment of SARS, I mean, today, with these skills that are not there that we are needing in this important institution? And also, into that question, I want to check, to what extent are you outreaching within our education system to ensure that we get more disadvantaged groups encouraged, I mean, to do courses that are relevant to make them to be part of this important institution? I'm not hearing a lot of efforts around that. I would be very much happy as an agent of transformation if I can get to know your commitment to make sure that our kids in the rural areas, our kids in the townships, are encouraged to do necessary skills that will make them in years to come, because there is no MPS in democracy. And as you can see, your comprehension is not a good story to tell. More especially around issues of equity. Employment equity is a challenge in the future. And I don't see us doing a lot, I mean, to turn things around. By the way, our agenda is very, very clear as of in party. We want institutions to be transformed, and we want to get your commitment to this transformation agenda. I want to hear your efforts to make sure that this is realized. I know you are committing in your performance plan, and you have been committing respectable members of staff. I mean, to ensure that we realize employment equity targets and employment equity imbalances within the institution. But our pace is disappointing. I must indicate our pace is disappointing. And I think it's high time that Minister, under your stewardship, we get a clear plan on how this particular commitment is going to be realized, with clear targets. Or else, we will get into another era. Remember, we are in the era of radical transformation. We really need to get clear plan with clear targets around how are you intending to address this problem of skill shortages, but also how are you intending to address this problem of employment equity imbalance that is an embarrassment, to this institution. Second issue, on the same issue of vacancies, can we get to know how many internal cases are standing here, and how does that impact on this problem that we are facing? I know last time at some stage, Minister, you did report that there are cases that are still going through courts of members, staff members. So let's get to know, what are the latest on those cases, and how are they impacting on this problem that has been I identified. And my second issue, Chair, is around which still links this one, because as much as we are worried about the composition of the institution now, we also need to be worried about the future, the retention of the skills. And I think you are moving to that in the plan. And the result of the matter is that I am not seeing any clear commitment as to how is this going to be addressed. Because most of you are very old, you might be leaving us, and you got this necessary institutional memory that we need, to ensure that we sustain, the legacy of this institution. So how are you assisting us, as public representatives, to ensure that we retain this additional memory without any crisis? Because if we don't address this, then the syndrome of traveling will continue. You will come back as consultants. It will be hard to hire you now as consultants, because we will not have created another area of leadership. And this is what we must discourage. So let's get a plan on how are you dealing with this retention problem. And this plan must be detailed. We need to get targets within this year. What are you intending to do? Can we measure you on those? To me, that is very, very important. And then my second area of focus, Chair, is on illicit trading. Minister, I know jokingly I was saying to the DG, it seems if we are learning new trends from the National Treasury of Late, In the past, we were talking about the black plastic bag. But of late now, we are talking about the box of the shoe box containing money changing through shoe box. Yeah, at the most part letter, you know. And all these are rated national treasures. So I'm worried that at this trend, this trend, by the way, it's an NTT. It's an NTT about the national treasure. This trend might be coming from national treasure. So on the illicit trade, I just wanted to check the collaboration between SAFS and SAFS on GMT state. Because recently we have picked up that involvement of SAFS into this illicit trade is a concern. And as we follow all the cases that are going through the jurisdiction, I mean, we can see that there is some evidence leading to that conclusion. So I just wanted to know, collaboration between SARS and SAPS on dealing with this problem is time. And I think that we need more. Or maybe there is a proper collaboration because it's very clear that SARS might be implicated in some of these cases. I mean, the reports are very clear. I'm not concluding any case that is before court, but what we are getting in the media is big scale for us as lawmakers. So I don't want to know if the collaboration between SARS and SARS is high, so as we deal with this thing effectively, because as correctly acknowledged in your plan, we are losing a lot of revenue as a result of this trade. So we really need to go an extra mile to combat this, because we need this revenue develop our country and to take South Africa forward. And also, Chair, you know, it's good acting commissioner to hear this. That time I hear of it, I know it was when I was trying to learn a lot of education, this issue of how does corruption impact on revenue collection, or maybe perceptions, public perceptions contribute to complex compliance. It's good to hear of this. But it's also important to relate that to what is happening currently. And we can't keep on telling the same story, see there are no changes around our efforts as government to fight corruption, our efforts as government to deal with issues of service delivery. But I'm not saying those efforts are enough, or I'm not saying the perceptions have changed. What I'm interested to know, Chair, is when last did you check the concern about corruption put in this river in the public sector? Why not did you test these perceptions? Or are we still using the whole story, I mean, to relate, I mean, the relationship between taxpayers and compliance? Because to me, it would be very important to know, is this perception changing or is not changing? Because we are making efforts as government to correct some of the mistakes around this perception, more especially on the issue of service delivery and corruption. And for our planning purposes, I just wanted to check it because it's very key, Minister, to know. Are there any, besides our normal taxation laws that come annually, are there any taxation laws that we must expect in this financial year? Because, you know, remember some of the proposed legislation we are able to process because we are not informed in time about processing this legislation. So I think we need to correct this year. Are there any legislation from SARS that will be prioritized? That is after your normal taxation legislation that we deal with annually. This will help us, I mean, to plan appropriately as a committee. And then lastly, Chair, the Davis recommendation, Minister. We said something about the Davis recommendation, the Davis Commission recommendation in a budget speech. But I think it's important that we are in a big parliament now. We revisit what we said. Can we get an update on the work that is being done? Because some of this work is filtered through now. I mean, your work. And as an oversight, wing, we really need to be updated on some of this, the progress made so far. Especially those areas that are coming through in our work. You know, could we please get an update on that? Thank you very much.
Chair, there is just an important matter that I left out earlier on, and the Minister had made the reference to financial inclusion, and I was then, when the Commissioner was presenting the strategy for SARS, core strategy, which includes your education, service and enforcement, one of the pillars that I think somehow is missing in this Especially because I'm looking at your expenditure estimates over the next medium term on footprint expansion. Is the physical presence of SARS in formerly disadvantaged areas. And the reason why that to me becomes absolutely important as part of financial inclusion, because financial inclusion is not only about the consuming the products that you know that are out there, but it's also about extending the services, those financial services, including becoming a responsible taxpayer. And my main concern is that if we look there in your footprint expansion, it reduces. And I'm not sure how many of those, in terms of the footprint expansion, are going to be in the previously disadvantaged areas. And we've seen a lot of malls, there's a lot of modification of township economy, but I have not personally seen like a SARS office in those places, because that will increase access. And also, it will also be bringing those that are outside in. I'm talking from those people that are really probably that may we may consider them as contributing insignificantly to the tax, to our tax revenue. However, they are very important because I did a study of traditional healers. The kind of money that is circulating there, and those people are not paying any taxes because they don't even have that expression in their own area. You know what I mean? So I think we need to think beyond that rather than perpetuating apartheid special development even in our own thing. In short, I want you to tell me why do we have a decrease in the food trade expansion over the MTF instead of having an increase, because I would imagine that you will be incorporating other new areas. And not unless you are actually talking about those areas in your footprint expansion here.
They will be using third party to collect debt on their behalf. But could you please compare that data for the committee so as we know we don't get surprises in what is said? And then secondly, could we get just an update, a small summary, how much is in this age, I mean, to be outstanding from the so-called high net worth individual taxpayers? I know you are handling such cases and you are able to try to give the projection how much is outstanding that you are expecting. I know you have been doing a very good work on this area, but it's important for us to know how much are we owed as a country by individuals with big money. And lastly, I can see that member is not around. The member asked because I was also going to listen very, very attentively to your response on mechanisms to deal with transfer pricing manipulation. So could you, because I know you are committed to do something else, what are the mechanisms that you are looking at to do for us tomorrow? Thank
you. If I raise any questions that are fully saying it irrelevant to what the discussion is here, please understand it, because Eric appears here. There's a meeting taking place and I can hear every word. So I'm internalizing that. So maybe this with the working world just say, no, but that's not a discussion here. We can do nothing about it. The feeling is different. Hopefully they won't trump this because then we'll be victims. All right. So the thing that I want to say is, you know, Mr. My own view is looking at the quality, not just the quantity of questions. He should really be going to Mauritius over the weekend and sitting at a leisure with people and engaging for next week. I know it's about sex on national television. But of course, we'll say that if you pay for that, then it seems like co-opting the parliament, right? And the report will be more fit for the team. All right, so there's the work, do some work, check whether we can go out for a week, 10 days, with them.
and pay for their legacy. And we discussed these issues as it was raised. But on a more serious note, although it be, you never know what's serious or what's not, but anyway, no lie. But let me say this, quickly, you know, there's a facility conducted by the Eastern Mohammed over there, who actually with us here, who's under conference on prepared questions. And I think that the idea is that 10 people, you that is a guy, really agree and really don't agree. But they do a lot of work. And I just want to bring attention to some questions. It overlaps to some extent with some of the questions raised, but it's just paper yesterday, so this is the committee raised, that in addition to what David said, the vacant post and so on, but in particular, Acting Commissioner, with regard to audit, IT, and tax administration specialists, she asked about that. Then the question is, 20% of your senior leadership, chiming in on what David just said, may potentially be leaving in the next 4 years. So, you know, there's some sort of preparation for that that you can share with us. Then we feel, agreeing with the committee researcher and content advisor, the SAR should regularly update the committee and its risk mitigation strategies pertaining to all the identified risks as well as other challenges. So, you know, those are things coming from the committee researchers. I think that sounds good. That they're asking, and I do it on behalf of the committee. I want to say, as limited as time, that it would be helpful if you could just give us a simple definition. Are you the minister somebody, on what exactly is transfer pricing? Secondly, what do you affect base erosion? I don't understand personally. I don't know other members do. I don't. It's sometimes useful for a chair to understand when I'm sitting in, you know, my job is to call it. Profit shifting, what do you mean by that? I don't know what you mean. Maybe others also don't know what you mean. But I certainly don't. And if the other members think these pieces are irrelevant, nothing stops you listening. You know what? There's no rule in Parliament. A committee is shaped by the committee. So if you feel no answer to these questions, please say so. Because I can then speak to the minister over the key, which is due between you and me. So I can speak to Ivan today. You get this thing done outside. But if you think it's politically necessary, fine, let's get definitions for it, right? Now, the next thing I want to say is that I don't know much of this. I have to learn now this area. But my glimpses are, not so long ago, I did business day. It's one of my main sources of understanding the economy, business day. So they always say the national treasury is like number one or number two in the world for the quality of documentation. Now, there are members in the ANC who all disagree with national treasury's policies and so on. Who you remember? And ideologically, we have our difference. So what? We're not a narrow political party. We're a broad national movement, right? But what I don't think one can question is the national treasury makes us proud for the quality of the documents itself. Not only the quality is necessary, but it is not true that we still rank among top two or three in the world. Then the sense I also have, is this correct that the IAC and SARS are like world-class institutions? You know, people say that to us. And it's something that Makosi spoke just now. If SARS is what it's meant to be, comparing your business directly, it should be doing more to help others with all the constraints, right? On this continent. I think it's a very good question. And also the question that struck me about what Makosi said is, we need to ensure that there's an emerging elite also in the township. Must be treated equally like everybody else and being effective. And the culture, that's a wonderful example of use of treatment and unit. Never struck me actually. There's a whole informal economy there, not just saying every in urban areas as well. They don't pay taxes and so on. Then the question I wanted to ask is, this illicit economy, we read about it, but and then it's unfair question to ask. Do you have a sense of precisely the rate increasing? Like you say, base spend figure, you have a percentage of what? I have any total sense of it, right? But do you actually have a sense of that and its impact on the economy? Now, you're not going to answer all these questions. I'm just signaling to you what are things we will.
that will be something that even the new chairperson raised. And I'm encouraged to talk because there's a little state of nation card that's written. I'm thinking, hey, is that wrong with me also saying something? The question I want to ask, and this I want an answer to, the three terms I want an answer to, that I'm not negotiating around because I'm thinking to some of right? The question I want to ask is, compared to other similar domestic countries, what is the percentage of tax compliance in our country? Is it higher or lower or whatever? Then I wanted to say that, you know what strikes me? If the question is about the financial services board, a certain party claims it's going to write to, like it often does. It goes to the media, says we're going to contact the chairperson. Up to today, I've got no letter about this thing, but they want to raise it in this committee. And it strikes me it's a fair question to ask. The financial services board CEO is accused of all sorts of whatever the guy, when it is a public domain, let me mention it, yeah, whatever he is, whoever he is, right? And we got a very nice email reply from the financial services board, which is very odd. He said, well, look, we don't know what he did, if that's my understanding of how he is a person's culture, maybe it's a bit of vague in my face also, right? Saying the guy saying, well, on behalf of the financial services board, well, look, he's not connected to his work directly here, therefore, we're not investigating. If indeed did say that, that's an absurd reply. I don't think he did. I think it's a skewed answer. Nobody is stupid enough to think that to say it's the same. Because I'm having a different, right? I mean, well, whatever the situation, this party has yet, my friend, to give us a letter. You know, usually the media gets something, and then about 2, 3, 4 weeks later, somebody remembers the thing they haven't sent to the chair. So we have no letter from the chair. But it doesn't matter. Somebody else raised the chair. The shoebox example, right? The mosque. So what they are asking is, if there's something you can say, if it's appropriate, legally and so on, I don't know. But we have to call the financial services board in some form or the other, it's a good party, is it? Asking what's going on here. Okay. Then, this legislation from SARS, maybe the legal health us. I want to ask us, but before I forget, in all the class, have you got a legislative program for this calendar year? Because we need to ship our program. And legislation from SARS, I suspect, is, would I be correct? It's very difficult for members, the average member like myself, to understand it, isn't it? So this legislation from SARS, we need more time. Isn't it very technical? Yes, and I have to say that. For the members, you're an expert now. Not about you, not about average member. Would I be correct to say hard to process the legislation?
Yeah, of course, there are normal which come annually.
The annual
tax administration.
Yeah.
When you usually arrange workshops with which is fine. And I was just saying there are other limitations that need to be incorporated into our program. Let's be informed of that. So as we plan appropriately.
Right. And then, you say the growing discourse about spending. That's an instinct of sense I also have, right? But you have like evidence about it, so what is it? Can you actually tell us the extent to which this is going to happen? Now, all these questions, if you can answer the first three concepts, tell us what our percentage is, I'll be satisfied today of compliance. But there's another question I think I should address to a minister. I don't know a minister. There are obviously certain sensitivities and sensibilities in right? There are obviously limits to what Parliament can say to the executive in respect of appointments. But this thing is something that goes back to the era when I was sitting in committees. And the late system. It's about these departments having people act. Who have years and years and years, your key comments about Hollywood is not the original minister. Because I think you said it years ago and it was in Parliament. No? Now, let's think. It's a major institution, right? Now, I have no brief for anybody in particular. I don't know who should be the SARS commission. But what I think is sooner or later, surely the executive as a whole and whoever decides these things, presumably the national minister and constitutional the president and whoever, I don't know how it's done, but at some stage or the other, surely you must appoint a commissioner. Can you guide me? Is it appropriate for the committee? Yes, can you guide me? To say in our report, bearing in mind the sense of sensitivity and sensibility, you can word it like that, the parliamentary committee feels that consideration needs to be given to appointment of a commissioner, whoever conference now and then say, the Associate the Public Service and Administration Minister, too many people are enacting exactly. So sure, I think it's reasonable, Minister, for us to say, we're not asking you to answer here. But in our report, we can signal that it's time we decided within a reasonable time frame to appoint a commissioner. A public commissioner, but it's a 5-year term or something. So it's 5. Not more than 5. It's wonderful, you know how you can get away with this. Appoint a commissioner for 6 months. And so you need to pick the person to act as commissioner. That's a good point. All right, good, there it is. I'm not expecting commissioner or minister that you apply to all of them. Pick up on the, what you can see is overriding like themes that are emerging also. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps let me start with the MSP matter, which you have just raised. We did issue a statement after I had written a letter to the FSB when the matter hit the public domain to get a full report, because as one of the employees of these institutions, it is actually incumbent upon us to understand exactly what the situation is. Quickly, the statement reads, it's a very short statement. The Financial Services Board is investigating whether Mr. Dawood's actions compromise the carrying out of his duties at the FSB, as the FSB's chief financial officer. The investigation has been carried out by the FSB's internal audit with the support of Auditor General. Should the investigation find signs of wrongdoing, a full forensic investigation will be launched. That's now on the side of the FSB. So, and also to say that he resigned as the FSB's chief financial officer 2 weeks ago amid allegations that he had received payments from Africa Cash and Carry. All this is in public domain for consulting work for the company. I'm not too sure whether what is alleged in the newspapers is real consulting work. Which he only disclosed to the FSB shortly before his resignation. Otherwise, it is not true that he has reported that he is doing side work. This is contrary to the FSB policy, which requires that employees must disclose any outside business interests. This policy also prohibits employees from having direct or indirect interest in businesses that are being regulated by the FSB. And the body whose core mission includes promotion of integrity of financial markets and institutions, the FSB has zero tolerance of fraud and corruption. The FSB also uses an anonymous tip-off line hosted and managed by the professional auditing firm Deloitte, and those with information of fraud and corruption-related activities in the financial services sector, and I encourage you to make use of this facility by emailing to fsb@tipoffs.com or calling 0800-313-626. That's the statement we issued. So from our side, we take the matter quite seriously, but we also want the necessary processes to unfold. The same with the SARS, because these are two institutions that both have a relationship that belong to the finance family. The same with SARS, the matter is being attended to almost in the same fashion as the FSB. And also to dig deeper into whether there aren't any other implicated officials within SARS, because if he claims to have a relationship with people, there are names also mentioned there, and those people are actually under the scrutiny. And once that has been concluded, the committee will be briefed fully, but it will also be made public once we have concluded.
Her legal rights to reply to all the things and the process is done for. Once that is finished, then the report comes to Parliament. It does not seem to me appropriate, dear Senator Daniel or somebody who's a lawyer here. You don't have a legal certificate. Then I don't think Mr. Cohn is the legal person. I don't know. Sorry, who?
Say the lawyer.
Who's the lawyer? Are you a lawyer? You're not asked about that. Look, I'm not a lawyer, despite my relations and all that, but let me put this to you. As far as I can see, unless the committee advises otherwise, I will check. We allow this process to unfold the way the minister is saying. What is the point of calling that? If you're not a commissioner of inquiry or a judiciary or whatever, right? So, really, that's where we are. Yes, put in for that. That's how we did it, right? So, no need to send your letter, okay? I don't mention your party. Your letter that's supposed to have got to me, I don't have. If you said to the media, you can tell them. One of you personally, our colleague.
Right.
Okay, Chair. The other one that I thought also
should be... Before you know, Minister, I'm going to say something else. I just tried, in the interest of openness, somebody did phone me, and we're rambling on. That's the problem, Minister, of having the same phone number since May 1995. This person is a long story. The immediate reply to this person was, why would somebody give this money to that guy, right, if they've done nothing wrong? I suspect the person who gave the money, I suspect, I don't know, I said to someone over the phone, did something wrong in the first instance related to that. Therefore, they went to somebody else. So you can't come to me, write formally to me as the chair of the committee. I will consult with Parliament's lawyers. They arrange, they say, when are you coming to Joburg? Because we would like to meet with you. So I think, well, the good thing about giving you an answer, I don't know when, because I'm not in the executive anymore. I don't have a base in Swansea. I come for other work. I'm not going to come in. But let me tell you something else. I will not miss you. I'm not a lawyer. If you want, they were going to bring a lawyer to meet with me. I say, no, no, no. I would have just spoken to death anyway. Well, I thought I'd speak to him. But now that it occurs to me, somebody just phoned me. I gave them short shrift. But the reason I raised it is because I just remembered that you raised the issue of the issue. So I think what you're doing is fine. You're just alerting the committee. Somebody just phoned me. And I think that person is related to the persons who have a problem with Mr. Flat. They had exchanged. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And be careful when you agree to those meetings. You might also get your own box. but Chair, then the other one was the issue with regards to the appointment of the commissioner. It is a fair concern that the committee has, and you would appreciate that. In the previous, or my predecessor had made attempts and was unsuccessful in getting, as you have correctly pointed out, the importance of the position. When he was not able to do that, the process had to be rerun. But unfortunately, we ran into the change of administration. And with the change of administration, it is now a matter that we assist with, and we will come back to the committee with as soon as that. It's actually one of our priorities as we speak. And the issue, the other question was with in relation to the Davis Tax Committee and the announcements in the budget. The announcements related mainly to the small business, and all those are already before the committee, in fact already concluded. I would want to submit. But other than that, if there are any other amendments that might be coming to the committee or tax legislation that will come to the committee, it may perhaps arise out of the fuller report of the Davis Tax Committee. But we will follow through processes and bring it to committee when that happens and when it tables that report for consultation and for engagement with relevant stakeholders. Because I also raised the question with regard to, and I'm sure the Commissioner will quickly touch on that one, I'm going to request, as you have correctly pointed out, Chair, that we do not respond to all of the questions, but be able to get back to you. You will explain what transfer pricing is, because I did understand that in some instances it is not raised in its proper context. And the third-party collection table also have to be addressed. But the issue of financial inclusion, Comrade Makosi, and the expansion of the footprint, we will answer that also and look at the numbers that Des was raising. But as you have seen in our statement yesterday, one of the things is that with the taxism now, after the launch of the taxism, besides the point that yesterday I was also supposed to visit the Soweto branch, which is actually doing very well, which is a new branch, it's one of the new ones, which is an indication that we are actually expanding into those areas. But in order to determine that, you are correct also that you also need to establish the number of taxpayers in a particular area, because you'll recall that our tax system is a progressive one. It excludes the number of people. So people are below the threshold. It's only, you know, in the spirit of this progressive nature and redistributive nature of our health system, that they are excluded. So we have to identify where exactly it would be strategic to locate the office. We also have 9 mobiles, which means each province has 9 as a mobile, which is going to reach out to some of those areas as during this filing season, and which has been the case in the past, and it's also proved to be very useful to bringing the service closer to our people, but on a seasonal basis, because otherwise you do not want to keep the service there when actually it is not going to be utilized during the course of the year. but perhaps the commissioner would like actually just want to indicate how that works. And the other issues, I would imagine, and the filling of vacancies, again, broadly, I think we should admit that in some instances it becomes difficult to fill vacancies of the scarce skills because of the scarceness of the skills. But when you have those skills, because they are also scarce, but they are also sought after mainly by the private sector, then ourselves, and we may not be the employer of choice, and as a result, people might actually choose to go to the private sector. I agree that I think we need to extend our heart by also building those requisite skills, but we also need to be careful that we don't build those skills and build it for the private sector again, and that we are not able to absorb it. But the vacancies also, I think, must also be viewed in the context of whether the department or staff is able to perform its task in those given areas that we have mentioned. Because if it doesn't impact, it's one of the discussions we've had with the commissioner, that perhaps having vacancies has to do with the number that you had anticipated you would see. But if you are able to perform those tasks adequately without those, filling those vacancies, I think it is time that you started restructuring the organization such that it does not have those as vacancies, but you cover the functions if the tasks are performed. That's how the committee should actually be evaluating performance of staff. Evaluate the performance of staff on the basis of whether they are able to discharge their mandate as per requirement. So, and if we are able to do that, whether the vacancies should actually be material. But if we have submitted, the staff have submitted that we would employ X number of people, but are able to do this, the question that you should be asking is whether you really still need to fill those vacancies or restructure the organization as yes. But, Chair, and then the correlation between the on the one-stop proposal, you would understand, Comrade Pinky, that the other difficulty is when you have more than one country engaged in a process. Even when you have concluded your own processes, if the other country has not, you actually have to be patient enough to be able to reach that consensus with the other side. But the MOU. Yes. No. Yes. But as the Commissioner said, that the MOU having been signed, it's now the implementation, again, the cooperation between ourselves and trade and industry as well. It's something that I think he did mention that in the presentation also in relation to us working with the other departments. A number of other departments have actually benefited, and we've also benefited from working with other departments. The issue of the continent is an institution called, or a forum called ATAF, which is the Africa's Ex-Administrators Forum, where South Africa leads, that's where we actually share our experiences with the African countries, and have actually made tremendous progress in actually helping the other African states to actually make progress. And a number of such exchanges, even at the bilateral level, where some of the tax commissioners have actually come through to South Africa to learn, and we've done that, especially with our close neighbors, and I think it has paid the dividends in the process. Commissioner, those that you think the sky will fall if we do not respond to, and those that can actually just permeate to other meeting that the minister was alluding to. But the payment policy, Comrade McCarthy, even though it's not SARS, matter SARS would be on the tax clearance certificates. But the issue of the 30 days, our Office of the Chief Procurement of SARS, I'm sure the DG will talk to that when we get to it, is seized with that, other than making sure that procurement is properly managed, but also want to use, this office is also going to be seized with the task of making sure that the implementation of the 30-day rule payment policy is actually expedited and taken forward. But it's something that we also are quite seized with going on. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, I'll get a couple.
No,
notice and sensitivity at the moment that he is free to exit, obviously, whenever he has to go to his other, the duties here. And we ask the most pressing questions. It will be more detailed, but everything, you know, within the same framework. And obviously, you'll pick up the parliamentary monitoring system according to everything you say. So. But what we are saying is that we can't expect the minister, given the situation now, but annually, this is a very important day as a minister. And today, Treasury will be deciding that ministers must appear for time. And this year, we'll expect them to be here for the full time. But we have said that, look, we know that there are, you know, certain imponderables that he has to deal with as well.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, how much time do we have? 10 minutes. I'll be quick. I'll speak faster. firstly, it's not exactly correct that we are reducing the footprint. In fact, we intend to increase the footprint. We've had discussions about this, and we're preparing the strategy and the plans. We want to have more offices, but they will be what we call thin front-end offices, because we've got strong back-end offices with data, so we'll have... It means you don't need to have all your functions. Okay. We've opened the branch in Soweto, Bara. It's the second branch in Soweto. And we've just refurbished the Mthatha branch. Well, KwaZulu-Natal, compared to other provinces, got about 4 offices. But we'll get there. Then I'm going to be very fast. Dawud Siddharth, I think, for completeness, we have written to him and all the names mentioned, including the minister, to say, this is what we read in the media. Will you confirm or deny? So we've given them X number of days to respond, and after that we will then proceed with whatever we have to do. Then on the matter of consultancies, the way things have been classified in the expenses, that also is not an accurate reflection of the monies. About half of those monies are for contracts, so they're not really consultancy in the consultancy meaning of the word. Some of the money refers to audit AGs, audit fees, by the way. But in a detailed response, we will fix it up. And some of the expenses refer to contracts to security companies to secure some of our offices. So, we will give you something on that. On the growing discord, and before I come to the big three things, I'm going to ask Pete very quickly, that's Mr. Richard, on the combined survey.
Thanks, Chair. We have, starting for last year, been doing, through an external party, a survey of attitudes to compliance across the country, not only of taxpayers, but of citizens generally, in order to ascertain what are the drivers behind compliance, what are the things that are changing people's attitudes to compliance. The idea is that this will be run every year, so that we can begin to build an index of compliance in terms of attitude, because of the way we see it is that attitude drives behavior, and so we measure a lot of the behaviors in considerable detail, but we've never really before managed the attitude that sat behind the behavior. And obviously it is things like people's view of what's happening with their money that is one of the things that affects their attitude. It cannot affect their behavior. That's the link we've still got to try and see over time. But we, as I say, we started this last year. We have the first report, and we will be repeating this every year. And I think once we've got it right, we'll be able to start to put into the public domain to say, this is how people's attitude is changing. Obviously, as you would know, with surveys, you need to test them quite
carefully before you go with the results. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Jean Ravelli, because I just to talk a little bit more about our work in Africa, because it didn't come across at all in the presentation, because this is part of our normal work. We do a lot of work there. Jean, in dealing with that, we also deal with blood pressure and the scan.
Thanks for the question. Thanks, Chair. We did a lot of work in blood pressure preparation for a deployment of a scanner. While we were doing that, we realized that it is not only the scanner that you need, because you can't scan cargo 100%. It was to scan each truck that comes through or leaves through a border post. You're going to create a gridlock. So what we said was that you need a strong risk management system which will direct you towards which truck to stop and direct to the scanner. So what we did, we built a risk management system. We've got what we call automated risk engines now, which gives us pointers. We've got plans now of deploying a mobile scanner in Bybridge. The scanner will be delivered soon, as far as I know. We have dealt with the contracting and everything. But what is delaying us was the risk management system. It's selecting and targeting which cargo to take through to the scanner. I hope that covers that part of the question, Honorable Gagan. On the work that we are doing in the region or in the continent, like the minister said, we share HF, the Africa Health Administration's forum. Over and above that, we play a leading role in SACU. We're trying to change SACU from being a mere revenue sharing arrangement to dealing with tangible programs on customs. We've got a trade facilitation program that we're running. We managed to secure funding from Sweden. So this program benefits all SACU members. It's got everything to do with IT interconnectivity, capability building of customs administration, and part of modernization. We're also involved in SADC, subcommittee on customs cooperation. There are similar programs that are running there. But most importantly, we are the vice chair of the World Customs Organization in the Eastern Southern Africa region. It starts from Eurasia, you know, to South Africa, on the eastern side of our continent. We also managed to get funding from the Finnish government to run a capacity building program for them, because all they need is to develop their institution to be able to deal with the challenges of today. And I think we're doing a very good job in that regard. We've got our Customs Academy in Pretoria has got a mini institution called the Regional Training Center, which is a WCO, a World Customs Organization accredited training facility, where we've got money available, we invite customs administrations from the continent for specialized training. We also training detector dogs from many of our administrations in the region. We have trained Mauritius. We'll be training quite a few from Namibia. The Kenyans have made a request in the aftermath of the attacks in their country. They want to be assisted in training their detector dogs. We've got very good detector dogs with us. And the region is benefiting from it. Thank you.
I'm going to deal very quickly with the three things.
Yeah. Talk about, if I'm correct, about trucks going through to Mozambique and wherever, through and all forward on. And is there some sort of customs, is a payback or for that, given the risk the road is subjected to? Am I right? That's more or less the question. A formulated company, but that's what you make it up there. Okay.
Chair, I don't think that's a question that SARS can answer. Yeah, I think there is a cross-border transport agency that deals with those issues, and there's a few levy and all of those issues, but I don't know.
The response by the acting commissioner is very relevant. The cross-border section in the Department of Transport can relate to it. Very helpful.
Chair, I'm going to ask Nicole. Nicole, can you very quickly deal with transfer pricing, base erosion at a very high level?
Okay, transfer pricing as in law, the concept in law is a transaction between two parties that's connected to each other. Now, let me give you a simple example. You've got a company in South Africa and a holding company in a foreign country. The holding company in a foreign country provides a service to the South African company. Then the South African company obviously now pays fees to the foreign holding company. Now, if you evaluate that fee, and they pay a fee in excess of what the value is that is received in South Africa, that excess amount is effectively a transfer of value. So we haven't received value, but yet we pay an amount in excess of the value that we received. And that can be in respect of interest, any other service or product. I can buy a product from my holding company at a value in excess of what the value of that product really is, or the cost, etc. So that's in short, what a transfer pricing is. It's only in respect of a transaction between two connected parties. It's a party that's connected to the South African entity, and there's a transaction between the two. And they transfer value between each other, or in a South African context, we actually pay or transfer value from South Africa in money terms, to the foreign entity without receiving corresponding value in market value back in South Africa.
Base erosion, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the only dimension to the question. The other dimension was for which meeting, because you are committing in your performance plan that you'll be dealing with a manipulation of such. Now, the question that came from my side was, which mechanism must we look for and in dealing with this manipulation of transfer pricing?
As I said, transfer pricing is a basic evaluation. So if you need to do an evaluation of whether there is actually transfer pricing, it is not just evaluating this is a commodity that I received or that was transferred or paid for, etc. It's an economic evaluation of the transaction between all parties. So in order to determine whether that transaction is at market value, you need to do a huge valuation of what is in the market, the price that I will pay for a similar transaction or similar product or similar service or anything of that nature. So that's the evaluation that needs to be done. It's not really a tax concept that says, well, transfer pricing happened here because you did fail. You actually need to do a full market evaluation of the similar types of transactions between other parties that deals independently with each other. Whether this specific transaction between the two connected parties is then a market-related value that was paid or not. So I think that is one need to understand why there's transfer pricing, how you go forward in evaluating whether there's a transfer pricing, and then how you attack it. There's a highly complex economic area, not solely a tax evaluation, if that answers your question.
The other two contexts, please, quickly.
Okay. Profit shifting. But base erosion is very similar to transfer pricing. But it goes further. In a scenario where, especially in an e-commerce, in a global environment, entities become globalized from South African perspective. So what they do is they're taxable in South Africa. But someday I need a footprint in Africa. So what do I use? I use a double taxation agreement between South Africa and other entities, and I move my head office. So effectively you're moving your tax base from one entity, from one country to another country where there's a more beneficial tax regime. So it's moving from a higher tax regime into other areas. So your tax base in South Africa are being eroded due to the abuse and use of double taxation agreements worldwide. That's one example. Transfer pricing in itself is an example.
And then generally, you know, what happens is you try to move the costs into the jurisdictions where there's higher tax, and vice versa. Then, Chair, on the tax effectiveness of our tax collection comparison, what is the same? The consequence will be shifted to the profit. So, Chair, when we're looking at the effectiveness, we look at the one of the things we're looking at is the ratio of the collection against the GDP, and we are on the 25-26%, which is where many countries at our range, the effective ones, are. When we're talking about tax gaps, which is something we hesitate to talk about, the developed world, they compile to 15% gap. The developing world is 15% plus. Now, there are surveys carried out by the OECD, and these will be available, we'll make them available to you. And they compare us, benchmark us on different aspects. There are some things on which we are well flat, and there are some things on which there's a lot of work that we still have to do. So let me put that in general. And then when it comes to the issue of special efforts to recruit previously disadvantaged individuals, we have a graduate scheme which we are upgrading, and we hope by next year, or this year, we will do the work that needs to be done. We intend to, on an annual basis, take in 300 graduates and bring them to SARS and let them serve 2 or 3 years in the bowels of the institution and then work their way up. We need to fix the representative issue properly, and we need to fix it from the in a systemic way. We're trying to fix it like we've done before, artificially, and bringing in people. We've brought people in, and the composition here has looked much better than it looks today. But such people don't stay. It's a revolving door. They come, they go, there's a better job, there's more money. So we've got to look for a sustainable way in doing this. So the graduate scheme, so we expect a vacancy and attrition that results in 400 to 500 people per year leaving. 15,000, which is not a bad one. And we intend to bring in, and over 3 years at work, 300 will come in from the bottom up, and that 200 would be for incidentals, but we will also recruit them in batches rather than trying to recruit people individually. You can have more control over the composition of the people, the values of the people, etc., if you recruit them in batches for critical skills. Then, in general, what we've done in the management system is that we've brought the next two levels of management closer to an involvement with the executive, and involving them in our committee system and in meeting with them once in 6 weeks so that we can broaden the base and it's not just a narrow scope. So we're looking at a 2-3-year, 4-year program, and we'll try to set it up, and we'll give it to you so that it is measurable. So that's in short. Thank you very much.
some comments very quickly. If the committee, if anybody disagrees, signal, because it's like beginning to get the report itself. But frankly, I think what Dave is saying, presumably, doesn't, when you talk about representativity, we're not just talking about the national question, as it were. Or if we ask about the national question, we're also talking about gender. That but it's also raising something else, I think Makosi in different forms is also raising. You talk about class, if you like, for want of a better term, or strata. That, you see, it's not just racial and gender representativity. It's also about inclusivity. It's about people who are marginalized. So, you know, people come and give us statistics. We have so many Africans, so many Indians, so many so-called colored, but often these are urban elites who have been given space and opportunity. What about people in the northmost part of Limpopo and whatever, right? So it's also about that, I think we want to say. But we also understand the stresses we're under, where people were trained and then they, as the minister and you have said, they leave. Or, you know, a little market economy and so on. But there are ways and means that we, I think, the minister and SARS and the department will apply to mind to that. On the whole, I would like to suggest in our report that we recognize that there are challenges, but we must also acknowledge where performance on the whole is good. You know, there's too much of negativity and gloom. I think SARS, like the IEC and so on, are really working quite well. And we must acknowledge that. Whatever party he comes from, all of us, look at this vigorous questioning of SARS, right? He comes from the majority party. So there's no differences we have. Like, look, there are these issues that SARS confronts. We must deal with, and we must assist them to deal with, but it's also taken to task if they don't do what they should be doing. But on the whole, I think our report should signal that SARS overall is doing a good job. There are these challenges, but overall it's performing. By the standards of most institutions, that fall within the oversight responsibility of Parliament, certainly, and by other measures. Would that be a reasonable thing that the committee as a whole, as a majority, would want to say? You would not want to say. Yeah.
I don't agree, Chair. I completely disagree.
You were not here for the last hour and a half. You had other responsibilities.
Gave an apology that I'm going to the parliamentary authority.
I just assist
the process. But I must do a lot disagree.
Yes,
and give reasons why I disagree.
Yes. No, I'm not excusing that. I'm really alerting you to this. That I say very clearly, either the committee as a whole, I don't think the committee chairs do this, we'll be soon discover, or the majority in the committee feel that notwithstanding the many challenges, SARS is one of the institutions that is performing reasonably well or well. Now, in reports, can we check this? Until 2009 when I was chairing, there was no like space, maybe to change things, for minority observations. I don't have a problem with that. Just say the EFF disagrees with that. Just check whether we can do that. But I want to alert you to respect. You are the whip of your party, and you have to go to a chief of forum, obviously. I understand. But it's interesting that because you were at that meeting, you did not hear the questions, that the previous questions that these days on Roy and Ray, right? Challenging SARS. And so did Makosi and Pinky and so on. And you did not hear their answers. It's not altogether clear to me, based on this sitting here, how you can come to the conclusion. But that may be your conclusion drawn generally from your experience and knowledge, not from this meeting's interaction. That's what I'm alerting you
to. It will be so premature for the committee to want to make an overall judgment of us based on what we listened to now. And it will bring 2 hours, an hour which I went to the Parliamentary Oversight Authority to deal with other issues. So can I give the context of why I don't agree with you? And I don't agree with the committee if it says that.
Right.
I don't agree with the treasury if it says that. Look, there's a basic thing that the SARS should be dealing with, this revenue collection. And I don't think that it's doing that adequately. I give an example of the mineral resources, that it is not possible that South Africa is the richest country in the world and it's only contributing. And how do you want to celebrate revenue collector which can't find the mechanism to make sure that we maximize the fiscal benefits of South Africa out of mineral resources? They are over celebrating mediocrity. It's a reality. And the mistake of South Africa, everything else, little progress, we sit up and clap hands and everything is fine, we've made progress, we've got good stories to tell when there's nothing good to tell about. We must be celebrating everything that happened. It's not
true. What the committee is saying, for all the challenges which you were not here to witness, that he raised, SARS, what are standards of institutions in this country is performing well. Now the proceedings of Parliament are not decided by me. You can go to the Chief of Foreign and raise that. I'm ruling on this. Because it's on this matter. The rules as I understand it, can you guide me to call and so on? At least they were like that until 2009. At that stage, there was no space for minority reports. Minority like disagreements. However, my own personal view, which I made clear, is there's no ground in a multi-party committee, if the rules allow it this, to say the EFF does not agree with this observation, and in one sentence say why you think so. However, this report will be tabled on Wednesday. No committee chair, frankly, is obliged to say to the committee, do you agree, so we can process the report, people can think about it, when we look at the report on Wednesday, that's when people get an opportunity to say, I disagree with this section, I disagree with that. Finally, if we have no other way of dealing with it, I don't want to deal with it like that, we put it to the vote. So you want, and maybe even one or two others, you want to do you want to do it like that, or do you want us to have a consensual approach that says the majority feels this way? We're not saying you're obliged by the majority, it doesn't refer to you specifically, but I'll push you quickly on the process issue. Can you guide us to two committee chairs, and you know, you'll soon acquaint yourself with the rules. It's dealing only with the rules, not the substance of what Freud is saying. Only on the process issues. Yeah.
Chair, I just wanted to say, I think Floyd, Honorable Floyd, is approaching this from an ideological orientation perspective. And that's what we're dealing with here. We were looking at the SARS annual performance plan. And in terms of the targets that they have set, they have often met those targets and even exceeded those targets. And therefore, we can conclude on the basis of fact that we have before that SARS is actually doing what, if he wants to come up with the issues of policy review, then he should be saying so. And I don't think this is the right platform for that today. But going forward, maybe he could come up with his recommendation about how best we can review the policy. But within the current policy regime and within the current annual treatment plan and the strategies of us, yes, we are saying, Chair, we are first doing this work.
I'm out of my field of myself. Floyd, you'll get a chance to reply. I don't want to get involved in the substance of the issue. But until 2009, this is the way the rules were. Can you guide us now? Yes, give Floyd a chance to reply. But you have accepted democracy. You won 6.5% of the vote. Right? And you guys frankly did great for a party that surfaced from nowhere. Right? But the point is you are 6.5%, right? Okay.
I was just trying to make some input on some processes. You catch up my first point that as a committee, we'll be having our part on the report on Wednesday. For today, because we want to put SARS and National Terrorist SSA to their hands. I mean, let's get more information to them, for them. So as we sit as a committee to finalize our report on Wednesday, we are properly informed. So my humble request is that put them to better use, and because I think we are building them now. We are engaging on what we are supposed to shelf for a Wednesday.
Okay. The answer to the rules is very right about the rules. Do we have minority reports? We do not. Okay, so we'll acknowledge your disagreement.
Let's address
the issue. I'm not going to allow it, JFP. I'll give you 2 minutes, no more.
Yes, that's one. We must address this in that. Even if SARS has met its own objectives, it's not cause for celebration. If you set a hurdle, which is at the level of your knees and jump it, and then you want to celebrate that it's just in a hurdle, which is a new level, and all of us must be driving to celebrating that. It's a basic thing. Can I be respected, please? So there's really nothing to celebrate because there's so much wealth available for South Africa, and the revenue services must be able to determine how much wealth is available and how much can we generate or plus in the country. And to celebrate what we have now, it's pure mediocrity. Well, of the situation, and you can't for all of us to say that because they said that they're at a very low level and they've just done that hard work, all of it. You can't do that.
Okay. The petition, which is quite boring actually, and really, we not allow any member to just repeat in the way you do it. You don't have that right, because then everybody else will. It's simple. I think the point he's making is often what organizations do, if they can achieve, like, let me tell you something. I suspect, yeah, but let's be careful, there's Linda again and so on. Okay. There's a certain airline company. It says that it takes 2 hours, 10 minutes to fly from Cape Town to Johannesburg. My sense is they know it takes 2 hours, but they add the extra 10 minutes. So what they do is, when they record it, they say, this is my theory, my wild suspicion, right? They say 100% of the flights turned up on time, knowing full well that they give themselves an extra 10 minutes, and any average flight will take 2 hours or less, right? But I think the point is making is, if you set your targets low, you're always going to do better than that. That's a useful point. But the point I want to make is that there will be a reply to that, that Mark is going to give you, and Dave is going to give you, and whoever else. But actually, so we're going to have an endless discussion. Look, you are now having certain rights you didn't have before 2009. You will record that you don't agree. I'm not allowing any more discussion at Acting Commissioner. Now, I'm told that, Minister, you'll be pleased to hear this. I don't know if the members will be, but the committee chair tell me, Minister, the committee secretary tell me, Minister, if you're paying attention at all, because I really want to be impressed by the committee, that no more, how do you say this? No more does Parliament provide lunches for sittings that go beyond lunchtime. Is that right? So we have to take into account that the workers out there have to close soon. So we're going to allow you to make your input, but we have a leader. They said they close at 2. And what time do we have to go for the lunch? Probably to 2 is fine. Yeah. So give you 20 minutes to 25 minutes, and then we break for lunch and then come back.
Chair, we ask those who allow others to leave. Thank you. Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Chair. We now get into the National Treasury. Chair, the statement that we are about to discuss is the National Treasury one. You know, we already repeat this part. Oh, you said we should start with the, should I still do the intros quickly? People will introduce themselves as they think. Yes. Yes, as they speak, they will introduce themselves. The DD is leading the delegation and is brought 60 DGs because he did not bring a large contingent. Actually, he brought 70 DGs. And then we have various heads of others, of the other ones. It seems like we don't have the electronic copy, but we have circulated the hard copy. Yes. Chair, there are two pieces of legislation that establish the National Treasury. The Constitution itself says that there shall be an Act of Parliament that does that, and that Act of Parliament is the Public Finance Management Act, and then governed by other pieces of legislation. But in Chapter 2 of the PRMA, we find the mandate of the department. That's why when you see those treasury aims and objectives on the first slide, or slide two here, which talks about developing fiscal framework and coordinating macroeconomic policy, you will find that in chapter two, under functions and powers, section six, which runs from A to H. So without going into what's in chapter two, members can refer to the thing, and we shall be measured and judged according to that chair. The strategic alignment in the third slide talks to the alignment with the National Development Plan, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the National Growth Path, the New Growth Path, and the National Infrastructure Program, which is coordinated by the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, and the government's outcomes approach as encapsulated in the MTSF. The fourth slide talks to the work of the Treasury contributing to the NDP and the MTSF. Outcome 4, which talks to digital employment through inclusive growth. Outcome 6, an efficient and competitive response to economic infrastructure network. And outcomes 9, outcomes 11, and outcomes 12. Again, the obvious is that on this slide 5, we talk about the economic outlook in general, where we have seen the economic activity contracting in the first quarter of this year owing to protracted strike action, and there is evidence of that because of the 24.7% that was taken away by the mining sector, which translated into 1.3% of our growth of GDP at that time, even though agriculture was growing at 2.5%, and retail and wholesale was also growing, and also the manufacturing was impacted upon also by this construction, particularly in the mining sector. Also evidence points that the construction was growing at about 4.5%, but that was eroded by the performance of the mining sector. Confidence is low, as you would all understand why, which is that a number of members did raise the issue of what needs to be done to build confidence, and a lot has to do with how we conduct ourselves, not only the executive, and I would want to emphasize that, but a number of levels. The employment growth rate remains sluggish, with only 9,000 jobs created in the formal sector in the first quarter, according to the quarterly employment survey, and that growth over the medium term is also supported by environments of stable macroeconomic conditions, with interest rates at 30-year lows, public sector capital investment, which has been doing well, additional electricity generating capacity, and robust growth in the region. That investment growth is also expected to reach 6% by 2017, with public sector investment expected to average annual growth of 4% over the next 3 years, we project that we will be investing in excess of 800 billion over the medium term. And that our financial markets are deep and liquid, enabling governments to finance the bulk of borrowing requirements at domestic markets. We also just made that and highlight that foreign debt is low by international standards. We have got numbers also to confirm that. The economic outlook and the risks, we know that in the advanced economies, the risk of true activity from low inflation division, particularly in the euro area, and the tapering of the U.S. monetary policy that we have seen in the past, and that there are some upside risk from rising confidence and growing investment demand. That in emerging markets, further growth disappoints, lower potential in the changing environment, particularly in China due to tightening of their monetary policy and other initiatives. At the domestic level, there is a need to reduce the issues that we see currently in the industrial front and to reinforce government communication to increase confidence. And that further delays in introduction of our infrastructure rollout program and the high debt levels of households and social tensions that are due to slow pace of job creation. And the volume of federal government debt is set to increase from 1.4 trillion, rising to 2 trillion in the 2016-17, which amounts to 44.3% of GDP. Chair, turning to the straight line itself, I will allow the DG just to go through the various programs. But all this, Chair, assuming that members have read our straight plan and the annual performance plan. Mm-hmm. So this is just a high level. If we had our way, we would have just come here and just put questions rather than just going through it. But I'll ask DG to the front room.
But yeah,
Thank you.
No, because you see, the thing is that it's useful beyond the written text we get from you. When you explain something, right? I'd also say that to be fair to Esther and the team, they did a very good job. Sorry, we may not agree, but tough. They did a very good job of giving an overview and also raising questions. So I think members who came yesterday are familiar, and we have time constraints.
Thank you very much, Minister and Chair and Honourable Members. I'll try and be brief, but take the important issues. The first two slides that list the programs, starting with the admin program. Of course, we have already heard about program 9 and program 10 is also a kind of standalone entity which accounts on its own. On the administration program, as the committee would really, it's the program that's about making sure that the Treasury as an institution is led, it works, it's got the wherewithal in terms of accommodation and all sorts of tools of trade to function as a department. But of course, it's also anchored in a culture that's about delivering to the South African public what it deserves. The next program combines a couple of divisions, including the one that does our focusing and economic modeling, the one that advises on tax policy and oversees or develops policy for approval by the minister, of course, in relation to the financial sector. The combined, these programs, what they do, play a very important role and will continue to play an important role in contributing towards ensuring that we advance policies that contribute to inclusive growth and job creation. And as you can imagine, taxes and policy affecting the financial sector can contribute to this. The last bullet talks to a reform that we are undertaking to make sure that our financial sector, like many around the globe, is regulated sufficiently tightly so that it cannot contribute towards a calamity of the kind we saw in 2008 and 2009. As a matter of fact, when the chair asked about whether there will be pieces of legislation that will come from the Treasury, one of the important pieces of legislation relates to institutionalizing this. The next two slides deal with the divisions in the Treasury that are responsible for putting together the budget, interacting with different parts of government at national level, provincial level, local government level, to make sure that the budget that gets crafted gives expression to national policy imperatives and priorities. And it is these divisions that will ensure that what the chair was referring to, which is making sure that the budgets of the various spending agencies that claim public resources are actually aligned to the National Development Plan through the way in which they interact with these institutions and the advice that they give. Of course, they also undertake extensive analysis, for instance, to refer in the second last bullet to the long-term fiscal sustainability issue. We undertook a long-term fiscal report on request by Parliament. Although we didn't publish the report itself, but we did talk to it both in the MTBPS and in the budget. It was about assessing the long-term sustainability of our programs and even possible policy changes that were in the process of being considered. In the next slide, which is a continuation of the divisions that deal with the budget, we will look at reviewing or supporting provinces and municipalities in the delivery of infrastructure, a very important initiative, but also ensuring that we can implement a program focus we've decided this year, which is an incentive-based mechanism to the allocation of conditional grants to municipalities. It also drives an agenda which is about ensuring that our cities, the big ones, can play a very central role in driving growth, providing better spatial plans and ensure that we can break up the apartheid spatial patterns that have characterized our country so far. Of course, given the census that was done in 2011, we will use that data to update the local government infrastructure conditional grants and make sure that they are aligned to the policy imperatives that we want to achieve. The next slide talks to two very, very important parts of our government system. The asset side is about the financial oversight of the entities of the state, all of them that you can think of, from the biggest like Eskom to the smallest none that I can think of, but maybe still important, about making sure that they are financially sound, they've got appropriate capital structures, balance between debt and equity from the government to the extent that they need support from time to time of one sort or the other, including guarantees that can be assessed, quantum thereof determined, and of course the conditions that go with that can also be determined. The liability side is about making sure that to the extent that at any given time, as is the case now, government spends more money than it actually raises in revenues, then that bit which has got to be borrowed is taken care of, both from the point of getting the money in, but at the same time making sure that the debt, when it is now on the state books, is managed effectively and efficiently. Over the next couple of years, the numbers that will be borrowed are set out in the budget review. Of course, to achieve this, it's very important to interact with a number of key stakeholders, chief among them the investors, the people who lend us the money, which is what the second bullet relates to, but also making sure that we keep the domestic capital market that the minister referred to as being deep functioning, so that whenever we need it, it will be there to serve us. We do touch on that side on the issues of cash management, just making sure that at any given time, government has got the cash that it needs to be able to meet its obligations as they fall through. Perhaps at this point, might be worth mentioning a number that we don't refer to here, which is the fact that in any given week, through different instruments, government has got to raise roughly about 11 billion in cash. So it is this program that is charged with the responsibility of ensuring that such cash is borrowed in the various instruments and is managed as judiciously as possible over time. The next slide talks to financial systems and accounting. Perhaps the easiest connection honorable members would have to a program like this is the Office of the Accountant General. It is about in liaison with other stakeholders, setting the rules of the game, so to speak. So over the next 3 years, for example, this program will publish an amended set of treasury regulations, which will then ensure that financial management in our system can be strengthened. It will also work with other stakeholders to ensure that we can systematically improve consolidation of the national accounts. Now, this may include looking into the rules as to whether they are supportive of this or they need to be amended to make sure that this happens. An important part of this program is the policy frameworks, enforcement of policy frameworks, support for departments and entities in relation to supply chain management. Very important area, especially given the ambitions that government has in relation to how to use supply chain management to achieve multiple and likely so objectives that it would like to achieve. The last point I would make on this slide relates to systems. Honourable members may have heard that government decided several years ago that we should change or upgrade our financial management systems. We are in a process of taking a slightly different approach in relation to the integrated financial management systems project, and the idea is to really accelerate. First is to learn from what has worked globally and make sure that we can implement that and with speed, and ensure that our system does have government as a whole have access to the best systems to be able to manage its business. This slide talks to the new reconfigured office that was set up. It's very important to appreciate that this was not about creating new function necessarily, but it's about elevating the function that the Treasury had always performed in relation to supply chain. And I've already touched, I imagine, on all the issues that are actually on the slide. The last thing that I would mention, perhaps, that I didn't talk to is the fact that there will be some reforms in the period ahead, including, for instance, giving effect to the idea of centralizing aspects of procurement to the extent that doing so would help government save money, but also ensure that leakage is either reduced or prevented altogether. The next slide deals with our international financial relations program, which manages our interactions, at least through the finance track, with the rest of the world through the range of forums that are listed here, including BRICS Formation, G20, for an example, SAPU, and so on and so forth. This is a very, very important program, given just the role and the place that South Africa has globally, sometimes even if without a mandate or a specific mandate representing the voice of Africa at forums such as the G20. Priorities over the next 3 years in this area will be about concluding some of the arrangements or facilities that are being discussed within the context of the BRICS, including what members would have read about, which is about the establishment of a bank that's led by BRICS and a mechanism for the countries to have a virtual pool of their reserves so that they can support other in times of need. The other issues are self-explanatory. Then the program 7 deals with civil and military pensions. These are done through the government pension administration agency. Over the next 3 years, this program will finalize research options and initiate implementation for pre-funding for employee benefits such as retirement, medical subsidies, and either on duty and things like those. But there is also a process underway to re-engineer and modernize the business processes there to make sure that they are secure from the point of view of making sure that, given that there are huge sum of money that are being dealt with there, there's little or no leakage, and of course the speed with which people's benefits are processed can be improved, or the time it takes shortened, which is very important to make sure that people's lives are secure in return. Program 8 consolidates technical support or management support programs in relation especially to infrastructure, which is sort of very, very, very important. Over the next 3 years, one of the objectives will be to take forward and conclude the process of creating a government component, which we call GTEC, which is what that first bullet refers to. Amongst the priorities, that the technical capacity that will be housed in GTEC will focus on is large capital projects. If our government is going to be spending about 827 billion over the next 3 years, and so only continues to be 800 plus, then it does become important that our systems and processes for evaluating capital projects, deciding on the best option to meet every need, making sure that the most efficient option from a cost and other perspectives is chosen, then that this capacity will come in. Of course, this is not just about supporting business of the Treasury, it's also about supporting the business of the entirety of government on requests or on demands, whichever one chooses to use. For instance, clients of this components include, as we list here, the Department of Public Works, Department of Home Affairs, Eastern Cape, amongst others. Of course, we continue under this program to support or provide sunrising support for public-private partnership initiatives, some of which can be, or big contracts even, some of which can be massive. Honorable member would recall that Plaza signed, I think there was a 51 billion rand worth contract to run over 10 years. So it's very important that very solid in-depth technical analysis goes into those. So over the next 3 years, those kinds of things will be what keeps this program busy. There are also special initiatives that run under this, employment initiatives, things like the Jobs Fund, for example, also fall under this. I think that we can afford, with your permission, to skip the following slides and just go to slide 25. I'll say why we can skip it. I mean, it's just note, we refer to the long-term fiscal report. I think we have a presentation that nicely summarizes it on the internet, on our website, Michael Knott. I would encourage members to look at this, and if I know it will interest them, they would be willing to come, Michael or I or both of us, with the minister, if he has got time, and just take you through this kind of report, because it was requested by Parliament about a year or two ago, because they wanted to understand whether there can be what you could call an objective way to evaluate the sustainability of our fiscal path over a long time looking forward. And what this report has done is just that. It would be too hard to update it with new data and come and say this is a very, very concrete thing that the Treasury has produced. There can be no justification in me having to use five bullets to take us through this stuff. We can do it. The slide 21 just talks to how our approach to fiscal policy is anchored over the next one, highlights maybe some of the risks. We talked to, in slide 22, expense reviews, we've undertaken several of these in collaboration with DPME. And this may also, not may, it is also an issue that would interest Parliament, because if you take a particular program, let's say IDZ as an example, and you want to know them in depth, you want to know if they work, you want to know what lessons can be learned from the current ones as we move into a new legislative framework of SEZ, this would be a useful basis to engage in that. But let's move on then to the numbers, which is a very important thing not to hide.
Can I just raise a practical problem?
Yes.
It's such an arbitrary point at which to stop.
Yes.
But there's no other choice.
Okay.
I will have lunch or we don't. So if we don't stop now, there's no lunch. And that's going to mean torture for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
So why don't we just, I'm sorry about this.
That's fine.
But because your input is very important. But what we do is, let's break now. Can we just go to the old assembly chamber for those of you who don't know where to go to a restaurant? Or you can cross over. Have you alerted them that the people coming? That's what I thought I think to do. But nevertheless, let's go there. Who wants to go and have lunch, or cross over? I think Momo, you're not supposed to have lunch, right? So, cross over to M Block. This is the closest one. Let's come back. It's 2:15 now. Let's make it 2:30. Thank you.
Minister, you might have to exit.
Can I just indicate that there might also be other members of the team that I will have to release because of the flight that's...
Okay, I understand.
But the DG...
DG will stay.
Good, now we understand. Even if he's
not alone, he will... Okay, might be one of the first. Yeah, okay. But Cindy, dear...